Powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from the HF Barcelona Studios in Euless, Texas. Welcome to Primetime Special Edition number 75. Tonight, it's our three-year anniversary, and we bring in our guest of honor, Mr. Alan Rubin, president of Alec Bradley Cigar Company. And as always, the Primetime Show is our sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan sun-grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigar is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Alec Bradley Cigars. Alec Bradley is a family company. Alan Rubin named the company after his two sons, Alec and Bradley, when they were just little tykes. Now they are all grown up, working alongside their dad, making the best damn cigars you've ever smoked. Join the family. Try one today. Learn more at alecbradley.com. And by Aganorsa Leaf. Great leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists on the best lands of Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR or JFR Lunatic, Guardian of the Farm, or Casa Fernandez cigars, you experience the unique taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Cigar Marketplace. Cigar Marketplace is the first B2B premium cigar and accessories online broker that connects premium suppliers to retailers, simplifying the way our cigar industry does business. Retailers can now directly order from the suppliers what they want without the wait, getting the customers the brands they demand. Wholesalers no longer need to depend on going store to store to find the retailer that fits their brand. This allows retailers to enjoy a one-stop shopping experience to all their store needs. With an optional monthly subscription of $39.99, this allows men and business to benefit from all order-free shipping, 40% off second-day air rates, a 2.5% cash back every 6 months, refer a friend program, set discount of 10% off naked bundles, and exclusive weekly deals. Non-members can also take advantage of Cigar Marketplace's exclusive deals plus free shipping on orders over $750. Visit www.cigarmarketplace.co to learn more. And finally, by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all of the live streaming on the Primetime Network of shows is brought to you exclusively by Drew Estate. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Special Edition number 75. Today is Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I'm on the Red Stage in the Perdomo Cigar Studios, and I'm joined cross-country in the HF Barcelona Studios in Euless, Texas, by my friend and colleague, Mr. Bear Duplissy.
Good evening, Coop. Happy anniversary. It's been a crazy, crazy 3 years. I don't know how you put up with me for this long, but I'm glad you did.
No, you know, it's the other way around. you know, and I know it's just, I know we're going to get to that story in a little bit, how this all started again. I guess I always love reflecting on it. But I know you're a big milestone. You're probably more of the milestone guy than Aaron is. And I'm kind of somewhere in between. So, you know, it's kind of, but it's kind of, this was kind of cool because I guess it was show 75, I would say, is a milestone show.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, there's a name, isn't there a name for 75? The diamond or no?
Diamond, I believe, is a little bit, it might be the diamond number. Now, yeah, I got to look it up, Coop. You had me.
Yeah. You know all this stuff.
Well, that's true. I normally do. But 75 is kind of something I haven't necessarily seen on the soon to be horizon though.
And so, I mean, there's going to be a lot of, I mean, as I said, we're very, You know, we've gone 130.
Diamond. It is diamond. It is the diamond anniversary. It is a, okay.
I mean, we've gone 138 on the Thursday show. So we're over two. Plus, now we got Jukebox, which has hit 10, right? We're a little further behind on Jukebox. But, I mean, they're two strong brands. To have two strong brands go 3 years, I got to thank the audience, you know, and all of our guests and sponsors and supporters, because we wouldn't be here without it. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And our audience has not only grown over the last 3 years, obviously, but we've gotten to know a lot of our, you know, a lot of our frequent viewers and listeners and everything. And it's almost become part of like just a community.
Yeah.
Which is really great.
It really is. I mean, there's people who some people I have never met. Other people I know I've met like at a trade show for the first time. And others are people that are old friends that have come back to kind of what maybe they've moved away. You know, I'm thinking of like Big Scott's a good example, who tunes into a lot of our shows. I've kind of connected back through them on that. So all three of these channels, you know, it's very heartwarming. I could say that.
Yeah, it really is kind of having I was reflecting on this the other day too, of having like a, for lack of a better term, a social media relationship with somebody. Like, you know them via social media and that's about it, or just by like context or happenstance, because this industry is so small and everything. And then you meet them for the first time, and then it's just so different, yeah. You know? But it's really cool at the same time.
Yeah. And it is. And look, I know there's a lot of choices out there. There's a lot of great content that's on against us. There's a lot of people who are doing content now. And just, we are very, very grateful to people who take the time either to obviously be here in the live show. And oh, by the way, if you're coming back, I'm just as thankful if you're coming back and watching our replay afterwards. So, you know, just like I said, there's a lot of choices out there these days. And, you know, I could talk, the numbers certainly have grown, but they wouldn't have grown without our audience there.
100%. And, yeah. Speaking of our audience, we do have to send some well wishes out to our good friend Scott, who's watching tonight from a hospital bed. That's how dedicated our listener base is. We want him to feel better as soon as possible.
Yeah, Scott. I know Scott's been going through a lot lately, and we're thinking of you. We love you, Scott. So thanks so much. I've been there. I know. So you know that's yeah. So thank you very much. Again, that's the dedication we have with our audience. Which is, like I said, it's not taken for granted by any means. So, wow. Yeah. You know, Barry, and we'll kind of talk about this later on, but, you know, obviously we started getting together when we did a Hall of Fame show, right?
Of course.
Yeah. And we started talking, I'd say we never picked up that conversation on the Hall of Famers, but that's how it started. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think we can honestly say, and I'm not just saying it cause he's on the other line, we have a future Hall of Famer, in the cigar industry as our guest. And I think,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, not just cause he's on deck, but
no, but
absolutely.
I mean, I know, you know, a lot of people get the aficionado one. He's going to be in there someday. So it's our honor to welcome to the to Primetime Special Edition. He was on the Thursday show. We're bringing him for our 3-year anniversary of the Tuesday show. Mr. Alan Rubin, the president and founder of Alec Bradley Cigar Company. Alan, welcome back to Primetime.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. First of all, congratulations to you guys, truly. I mean, 3 years of doing the Primetime Special, 75 episodes just of, you know, of this brand particularly. I mean, it's amazing. I've always said that in the cigar business, because it's so small, in some way you have to pay your dues in this industry. And generally anyone who's in it for the short term is already gone. But the fact that you guys are doing this out of passion and you've built this brand, it's just incredible. And it's a testament to you and your passion to the industry. And I'm absolutely humbled to be on tonight. So thank you.
Thank you as well. Thank you as well. We know it's a tough time, obviously, for everybody. You know, we do appreciate it. And I think I told you I'm a lot calmer tonight for this. Like Alan, you actually were beaten by me getting more nervous for another interview. It was when I interviewed the founder of Cheap Trick when I was actually hyperventilating.
Right? I get that.
Yeah, it was that my wife can tell you that. So, but that was probably the closest I came to having a panic attack was that Cheap Trick show.
If I'm not going to hold the title, that's a good one to lose it.
Yeah, right. I was like, that was a walk. I was like, I think I said to Aaron, that was a walk in the park, Alan, compared to, because, and we weren't even doing that Cheap Trick show live. That's how nervous I was. So.
That's great.
I kept going, well, what if the recording bombs? So I'll get myself
worst case scenario. Right. Just, and it was really funny because you were telling us that story afterwards, Coop, and I was like, guys, I've seen him like this. It's fine. And you're like, no, Barry, it's 10 times worse than you've ever seen me.
Yeah. There was, but no, real, like I said, Alan, thank you so much. And also, we'd be remiss if we don't mention that, you know, Alan was our Primetime Award winner for Person of the Year in 2019.
Absolutely.
Yes. So
that was really great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. You know, just a great year you had. We'll be getting you that award one way or another. Either I'm in Vegas or in Florida, you'll have it. So
somehow, I hope you can drive it down or fly down with it, because I'd love to see you guys.
Yeah, no, the plan B, Alan, is probably I'll be in Florida for an extended period of time later in the year. So we have plenty of time to see people.
Can't wait to have a year.
Yeah, one of my favorite spots to stop in the South Florida area, and I always wear out my welcome there. I know, because I don't want to leave.
I can tell you. So, the one great thing about a lot of you guys who are in the media side of this, they come by. We want everyone to feel like family when they get here. So whether there's food or drinks, cigars, obviously. It's never about coming for an hour and leaving. It's about, you know, showing up when you do and staying until we all decide to leave. So there's no time limit on that. But we love it because it's really about being with family, and it's such a cool way to bring everyone together. I love having people here with us. So
yeah, no, it's a great office. You've always you and everyone on the Alec Bradley team has always made us to feel at home. So that's great. You know, so before we kind of get into things, I think there's a question. Bear has to figure out what he's smoking tonight. So I know sometimes. So Bear, I'm gonna turn this one over to you, because I think we're gonna have to get some help here.
Yeah. No. I would honor me if our guest tonight, Alan, if you decided which cigar I was gonna start off with, because I'll probably get through a couple of these, but I'm really excited about all of these. So we know about the recent success of the Project 40 that you've released. I've actually never smoked it. So
okay.
The Project 40, which I've actually never had the pleasure of smoking. And then I have a 2-year, not quite, almost 2-year old, Magic Toast. And, the cigar that I'm just anxious to try. I haven't tried it in this for Vitola is the American Sungrown Corona.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Look desperately for a Mundial, because I love that blend. But I couldn't find it in Clinch. But I went with these three as my finalists.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Project 40 you haven't tried. So I would say I'd probably start with Project 40. It's also pretty light and smooth and mellow as a blend. It's a nice place to start. And then, I don't know, I think I'd go to Magic Toast right after that.
Beautiful.
Kind of give you some different parts of the spectrum of what we do.
Absolutely. I'm excited to try the Magic Toast with this much age on it. It'll be a really interesting, I think. So I really love the blend. I love the cigar in general. So I'm anxious to see what age does.
That wrapper's spectacular. So 2 years on, it's going to do it some justice too.
Project 40, here we go.
Yep.
I'm excited. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And Alan, what are you smoking?
I'm smoking a Coyol Petit Lancero start. I always have to steal them from Bradley.
Yes. Brad and I lament about that. We love that. Yeah. We love that size, that cigar, perfection.
But, you know, it's interesting because today he got me back. So what happened was I was like, okay, what am I going to smoke tonight for the show? And I said, Brad, can you do me a favor and get me some of the 2019 Fine and Rare? that I had some that, you know, that I put aside for me. And so he came in with 10, and as he's walking up to my desk, he takes one. And then Ralph saw him walk in, and then Ralph came in it with like a pouty face. Like, can I have one? And then Mike Sirota, our vice president of sales, came in and said, God, I haven't smoked that in a long time. Can I have one? So what started out is I was going to have my 10 fine and rares to smoke tonight and to take home. I started only with seven. So we're even for the Coyo Lancero, Petit Lancero that I took from him.
Great. Yeah, love that cigar.
That's a great cigar. That's a great – I love that blend too. So I went, Alan, I picked up a box of these a few weeks ago of Prensado in the Gran Bellicoso. Okay. I love a box-press torpedo, a really good box-press torpedo. So I have lit one of these up, and it's a very, very nice – I've already smoked one of these. A very nice representation of the blend is in that box-press torpedo.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm not generally one who's smoking torpedoes or bellicosos, but I really do love it in the Prensado. There's just something in the fact that it's still pressed and then it concentrates the flavors down a little bit. So
yeah,
I think that's a good choice for tonight.
Yeah, so you know that is obviously obviously a cigar made history for you, and it was a historical night for us. But what it was interesting because I was. You know, I always try to get every cigar, right? These were just sitting on the shelf in at one of my retailers that I called up just to get some cigars. He's like, hey, I got a box of these. I'm like, really? Yeah. I said, just send them to me. So I had him send them to me because I haven't been, I haven't been going out, but I've been trying to hit some of my retailers from time to time too.
Yeah, which I think obviously right now is very important to be able to call your brick and mortar retailer and to be able to find a way to support them. And we've done that. I can tell you one quick story. I'm not probably supposed to tell this, but Bradley had called one of our territory managers and said, hey, you know, what's going on in the territory, and had a conversation. And the next thing I know, Bradley got on the phone with a retailer and purchased a box of cigars just to be able to put some cash in their register. So we all understand the breadth of what's going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was pretty cool because like I said, I always try to get something I haven't had before. And I'm not saying everyone has discretionary income certainly, but I'd say I want to make sure some of these guys have the lights on when everything goes back to whatever the normal is. I'm not allowed to say the new normal, by the way. So,
yeah.
God dang, Coop. Come on.
I didn't say it. I just said I'm not allowed to say it. I said whatever the normal.
If we could stay away from new normal, social distancing, any of those new terms, if we could just leave that out of today's conversation.
Amen, Alan. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we will for most of this, so I don't have a fear with that. So Alan, as we mentioned, we had you on. Back in August, it was right after the trade show, we had you on, Aaron and I, but I think there's a lot that's gone on. I think it's been, since then, there's been plenty of activity at Alec Bradley, despite all the distractions, and we'll hit some of those distractions, obviously. But let's kind of start it off, because I haven't, we talked when at the time when this was launching, but you're now several months into it. How are things going with the Lars Tietens project right now, and where did things stand with that?
Well, you don't start off with an easy question, I can tell you that.
Right.
So
this is primetime show. We have to do it.
Gonna hit me good.
Yeah.
So it happens to be that Lars was an acquisition, and I hadn't done anything in a flavored line since the late 90s. And so, I felt like I was a little out of touch on producing that type of a product, but Lars was very intricately involved in bringing all the formulas and all the things he does for the conditioning process. And ultimately, we had two major production cycles that we did, and we sold out of both production cycles. So, I mean, literally whatever I have here is a couple of bundles that we just keep, for ourselves. But ultimately we learned a lot with the Lars line. One is that the Alec Bradley name truly needs to appear on the product. Fortunately, the Alec Bradley brand is strong, stronger brick and mortar retail. And when people were not making the connection, we realized, hey, there's more we can do. So I think there was one issue that we learned about that. And two, you know, we allowed kind of Lars to a little bit just go wild in what he wanted to do. And I think we ended up with a little bit of confusion in the marketplace with the line. All the boxes, no matter what the blends were the same color. People had a little bit of a tough time designating between grass and Sutton Place and sweet and spicy and those type of things. So there was a good learning process for us. Fortunately, it's not like we're sitting on inventory, it's sold out. And I think now would be, is it, you know, we've been working on maybe revamping the line a bit, making it a little easier for the tobacconist and for the consumers to be able to find the product that they're looking for and pick that up. And so we have some stuff we're in the middle of. Of course, everything is now pushed back a few months, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, but, and actually it may even be a little bit longer because now we have projects that were scheduled as well that have become a little more priority, but we'll come back and do something in the near future with that, but we'll make it a little more Alec Bradley centric.
So that's an honest assessment. You know, obviously this was a big undertaking that you, you took, and that's a fair assessment with that, that you guys have learned some things, but obviously it still sounds like you guys are very much committed to this, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost from the investment side, it was a great investment for us to make. It gave us a lot in terms of grandfathered sizes and predicates and all of those things that we also needed moving forward. But in addition, again, you know, the market has changed from when Lars was at his peak till now. The market has changed a lot. So we need to be not as crazy, not as wild as what Lars would love it to be, but take Lars's influence and then bring that down. Make it, like I said, more Alec Bradley centric in its packaging, make it a little easier for the consumer and the tobacconist to be able to designate which line is which. And we're going to make some changes, but yeah, I'm definitely committed to bringing it back out.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. And in fact, the fact that you sold it out is also a very good problem to have too. So yeah. That's some good news as well with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're not sitting on something, it's easy to turn around and say, now's a good time to make changes. Because if I don't have to worry about selling off any inventory, it's gone.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that is an easy time to turn around and say, hey, what do we want this to be? Where do we want this to go?
Alan, you had mentioned about making it more Alec Bradley centric was the term you used. So I'm curious because I think if I had, first of all, I loved the sweet and spicy. I had an emotional moment with that cigar with your boys and Coop when we had them on the show. If I had a constructive criticism, it was the packaging. While certainly entertaining, like you said, it did have a little bit of confusion and everything. So I'm really excited because you guys have such a creative embodiment there at Alec Bradley and the things that you do and everything. So I'm really excited to see what you do. You have any? I mean, are there any details that you can share about how you would make this more Alec Bradley centric? Again, not to use your words.
Yeah, I mean, well, first and foremost, Alec Bradley didn't appear anywhere on the packaging. So a consumer would walk in and someone would say, hey, Alec Bradley came out with this new line. They're like, where? They're like, with the Lars Teetons. Well, it doesn't say Alec Bradley. So one of the things we realized is that, you know, with the momentum our company has, that it's important to let the consumers and the loyalists know who are, you know, Alec Bradley fans, hey, this is something that we're behind. And when you don't put your name on it, I think that says something. But again, I hadn't done this in 20 years. So we were trying to understand what is the line? What does it look like? What does it feel like? And we took all the leads that Lars gave us, and the packaging was a little too wild. Again, like you said, it was a little confusing in the market. And so what do? You say, okay, well, you know, if I had inventory here, I'd still have to sell, you know, would like to sell that off. But because it's gone, we're like, hey, now we have an opportunity. We see that people are loving what we're doing, but what can we do in terms of the packaging, putting Alec Bradley's name on there, maybe bolstering some of the sweetness, maybe bolstering some of the flavoring, looking at the price component of it, you know, because the first thing we did was we made such a huge investment in all these organic, natural essences and flavorings. So we already made the investment, but now we understand more what are our exact costs, right? We didn't really know what that was going to be. So now I think we're going to be probably a little bit lower price point, a little bit more accessible, and a little more defined. And I think that the line's going to be a home run.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Alan, it probably would have been easier to do it the way you did it as opposed to changing it right away. You know, this way you're able to get back in the market, you learn something, and then you make the change as opposed to making the change and not learning anything up front. So I would say, you know, if you that would have been the right way to do it, you know, the way you did it here. And so I think that's not a bad thing there.
Yeah. Again, it's not like I had a roadmap, right? I said, okay, you know, we acquired the Lars brand. We wanted Lars to be involved. He gave us a lot of ideas of how he had done it in the past. And then what we just realized, though, is that Lars can't live on its own. It's got to be part of the Alec Bradley portfolio, and we have to do a better job at that. And so that was the impetus behind it. And then when the productions all sold out, we're like, okay, so before, and again, we couldn't start again because as we were coming into the new year, we had some other projects and different things that we needed to kind of put at the forefront. And as we were getting ready to revamp, you know, this whole coronavirus thing hit and it put everything on the back burner, which is okay.
Were you pleased as far as the reaction to cigar enthusiasts about re-embracing the Lars Teton's brand? At least the ones I spoke to, most of them don't remember Lars Teton's from the first time who I talked to. So it was almost like a new thing, but were you kind of pleased with the way this kind of the cigars were received? Because it seemed positive to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Lars Teton's loyalists that did know him loved the fact that we used the original blends.
Yeah.
We used Lars was involved in the blending of the cigar in itself and then how that reacted to the conditioning process.
Yeah.
That was all a very big part of it. And so we were happy with that. I think people really were kind of digging the whole vibe that he put out there. But what happens is when you had that next set of people who wanted some alternative type of products, it was hard to distinguish which line was which.
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, that's kind of a learning experience for us. And we can take the momentum that we had, let everything kind of pan out the way it's supposed to naturally, more organically, and then revamp the line the way now we would like it to be based on the consumer's reactions and the consumer's needs. And so I think, you know, we've always tried to do a good job at listening. And allowing the consumers to tell us, hey, we'd like this small change or we'd like that, and at least I'll take it in and then figure out what that all means. So, yeah, I mean, if we're not, you know, we have a phenomenal sales staff and they're out there and we picked their brains a lot and they came back and said, yeah, there's some confusion on the product on the shelf and those type of things. So again, it was kind of a natural decision to make to say, okay, we sold off, you know, everything we had made. Let's take our time and let's change it the way we need to. So I'm excited about it coming up in the future. I think it's going to be a cool line for us.
That's great. No, that's great. Cause that was such a big story last year. I was kind of curious where it was going now in 2020. So we do appreciate that feedback on that. Mm-hmm. Barry, do you have anything else on that one?
No, just don't change the sweet and spicy. Cause yeah.
Yeah. Don't change the sweet and spicy.
Emotional moment.
Yeah. I have some extras if you need it. All right, let's so Alan, another really I'd say personal project that you did this year, or actually late last year, was the latest release of the Fine and Rare, which a beautiful cigar. It was a different Fine and Rare, but this was the one that paid tribute to your late father.
Yeah, and without question the closest cigar to my heart. Yep. You know, it's interesting because sometimes you don't realize life lessons that you've learned until later in life. But I was able to do some things with that cigar that were very personal to me. It's our first box pressed or kind of semi box pressed, Fine and Rare. That actually, in its own way, is a tribute to my father's business philosophy that he imparted in me, that I try and impart and pass down to my kids. It was just from the blending process of it to the packaging in itself. My father's favorite color was green. And if you look at the box in itself, it's this green undertone to it. It's really a beautiful packaging. There was just a lot of small components that had to do with, again, my dad and the time that I spent together with my father, which was a lot. We spent, you know, we worked side by side for 35 years. And so between his sense of humor and his business lessons, we tried to put a little bit of my father's personality into that cigar. Yeah, it means the world to me.
It was a beautiful, I mean, that blend in the box press was great. It really, I enjoyed it a lot. You know, 10 different tobaccos, right? That's the staple of the fine and rare. It kind of, like I said, it was kind of a different direction you took fine and rare in last year. Very satisfying cigar. Yeah. So the blend equally lived up to, I think, what you were looking to do there.
Thank you. It's interesting. A couple of days ago, I got a text from one of our tobacconists, a very loyal supporter of Alec Bradley. And he said, Fine and Rare is the best cigar I've ever smoked, and I'm down to my last cigar. Can I buy a box for me personally? And I texted him back and said, you know, we're out. We sold out. We don't have any more, but I do have a 10 pack put aside, you know, that I put aside for me. I put some 10 packs aside for me. And because it's for you personally, I'm going to send one to you.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, when someone feels it, you know, when someone feels the story, when it's more than just a cigar, you know, that touches me. And so, So actually he texted me, I think it was on Friday, and tomorrow I'll send him out 10 from that are mine, you know, that I put aside for me to, you know, there are nights that I sit out, you know, behind my house, by myself, and have a cigar and relax. And more times than not recently, you know, I smoke the fine and rare. It gives me like a little time to be able to reflect and kind of, you know, kind of talk to my dad privately in my own way. And so, like I said, when I got this one text about that cigar, I mean, I know he feels it. I know he's a family man. And so it'd be my honor to make sure that I'm able to get him 10 more cigars.
That's
so
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's beautiful. And also, you know, it's I've always loved the Fine and Rare series. I think I mentioned this on the last show. It's an annual release that I look forward to. I always get it, and I love comparing and contrasting the different years, which is fun. And I think this year, Alan, is the 10th year, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I'm thinking, wow, 10 years already. I remember when those came out, it was 2011 was the first one. I just remember I found them down in Atlanta, Georgia, right around like Thanksgiving. So, yeah, it was very much enjoyed it.
And in 2011, we actually launched it on 11/11.
That's right. Yes, that was the whole 11/11 thing. Yeah.
Right.
11/11/11, yeah.
And actually, that's in honor of my wife.
Birthday?
I don't want to say that. I just want to say that the 11 number is very special to her.
Sure. Okay.
And yeah, so that's why we launched that cigar. That was our very first Fine and Rare.
Yeah, like I said, I remember that one, and you've kind of brought different iterations of that back a few times. I think that one's been two or three times. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's always fun to kind of compare and contrast the vintages on those, which is what I love doing with those.
I hope they don't last that long, but yeah.
Yeah, no, they don't. I actually find the Fine and Rare cigar, you want to smoke it sooner than later, most of them, is what I've just found. That's not a knock on a cigar. That's just some cigars don't age out as well. And I think those have always been like ones you want to smoke sooner because they're just a really good right at when you release them. You know, they're never young and they're always at their peak. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons for that is if you look at, because we put the roll dates on each band.
Yeah.
Right. So every week's production actually has its own band on that cigar. So the roll date and the aging has already taken place. So, and what that cigar, because the amount of different tobaccos that we have takes a long time to age.
So, and I never kind of geeked out to this level. So if I got like some fine and rares, like from one box and another box, those roll dates may be different from box to box is what you're saying.
Take a look. You'll see.
Oh, wow. I never got to that level of geekdom on it. So I believe you.
I mean, if you look at the band, it will say the week it was rolled and the quantity.
Yeah, I know it does. Yeah. Yeah. I know it does. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did that because we only have one pair of rollers that roll that cigar. So we can see exactly what the quantities are that they're rolling that week. We know everything, and everything is marked down at the factory, and then that's how we put it on the band.
Alan, that first year you did that, right? There was some like really rare sizes that you also released. That wasn't there like a Diadema you released it at that was really limited? I'm trying to remember. I may be wrong on that.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember. I mean, the only box that we did that was a different type of fine and rare was the blender's box that we did.
Oh,
yeah. That was kind of a cool thing to do, where we took a small glass tube, and every Purito, which actually I have some Puritos here, if you look, what we do is we roll an individual tobacco, right? And so every individual tobacco that made up that blend, we actually put in a tube so you could smoke. You could smoke each of the individual tobaccos that made up that cigar in the blender's box. So, yeah, that went pretty quickly.
Yeah,
that concept.
Yeah, I love that concept. I love that. I remember that one. And someone like brought that to me. Someone was given a couple of the Puritos, and I guess I was able to figure out it was from the Alec Bradley. I said, dude, you want those? He's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, damn, if you don't, give them to me.
Yeah, it's funny because even while we're here now, you know, not being able to go down to the factory, we always have, what happens is every harvest, we have Puritos rolled of that harvest once it goes through aging, so that we can check that tobacco from that farm on that harvest and see how it compares in all the blends that we may use that tobacco in, to see, does it hold its flavor? Does that component hold its complexity? Yep. Do we have to go higher or lower on the plant for the following production? So that's actually, it's funny because I asked you early before the show started, like, do you mind if I do a little work while I'm here? Is I'm smoking off the last year's harvest of the new Hamastron farm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. One thing I was really excited about to hear earlier this year, I don't think you've come out with it yet. And I could, the new Diamond Cut cigar, the Black Market Esteli.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story in itself. So we have a production meeting, and we're talking about new projects, and I think it was Ralph Montero said, hey, why don't we do Esteli in the Diamond Rough Cut? And I said, yeah, I think that's a good idea. It'd be kind of cool to add to that, you know, one-time release that we do. And so there was some blend. We made a blend change. We actually took the regular Esteli. I think we added another leaf or a half a leaf of Ligero to it, mm-hmm. Just because of the way on the press type thing. And I don't know. The next thing I know, I look on Ralph's desk and there's like an Esteli Diamond Rough Cut there. And I'm like, what is this? He's like, well, you told me that you like the idea. So, it shows the efficiency of our staff, truly. I was kind of like a conversation. I just let it go. Like, yeah, this is something we should do. The next thing I know, I go in and sitting on, there's like a box all mocked, ready to go. Of the Diamond Rough Cut sitting on his desk. I'm like, okay, what is this? He's like, you told me you wanted it. You told me you thought it was a good idea. And so,
ask for forgiveness rather than ask for permission, right?
Exactly.
Bear, without a question. I mean, it was just like, it was almost one of those things like, I thought you said yes type thing. Anyway, smoked this cigar, absolutely loved it, blew me away. And I'm like, let's go. And so the cigar has already been produced, but now we still need to hold off just a bit. I think we were going to, I think just because of the packaging, the box factories were closed. So I think we were going to launch in July. Now it may be a little bit more towards August. We just have to schedule the box productions and those type of things. So, but yeah, it's going to hit. It's going to be, I think it's a one-time release. They didn't tell me too much about it. I think it's going to be again, an annual release of what we're going to do, but yeah. And actually, because it was coming out in July, I think it's either sold out or close to sold out. You know, I think it's already committed, but I don't know. I'll find it. I can find out tomorrow.
Alan, you know, the packaging was interesting to me. The mock-up I saw, it was kind of on a stand, and it was kind of, you know, it wasn't necessarily in a, you know, how we normally associate traditional box settings in a humidor and everything. So this is obviously a very special cigar, a very special project that would be featured in any humidor that it was in and everything. But it had me thinking about, you know, we've talked a couple of times already tonight about the collective creativity that makes up Alec Bradley and everything that you guys do there. I'm always curious to get the feedback from owners and manufacturers and everything about presentation of their final product in the humidor. And because a lot of, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this probably, you know, if you had a nickel for every time you heard it, you probably wouldn't have to own the company that you do. But, you know, that a lot of a frequent gripe of tobacconists is like when cigar boxes don't fit as cozy and tidy on the shelf as the other. But you've over time released some very special cigars that were, you know, in that non-traditional. What's your take on that when you put out a cigar that is meant to be featured? What's your take on that?
First of all, I understand where the tobacconists are coming from, right? Because ultimately the tobacconist is in the real estate business, right? What happens is they have a certain amount of real estate and they have to make a certain amount of money per square inch or per square foot, however they look at it in their stores. So I do get that. But it happens to be that between the Nicopudo and the Diamond Rough Cut and the SLE Diamond Rough Cut, they actually don't last that long on the shelf. So they end up going in maybe a little bit of a special place as an annual release. They sell out pretty quickly. We don't make all that many of them. So to me, you know, ultimately, you know, listen, people buy with their eyes. Presentation is everything, right? The cigar has to perform. It has to be everything that you build around. The cigar has to be a phenomenal experience to the consumer. That's what we work the hardest at. But we surely do want to dress it up properly. And the box that you saw in the mock-up is actually a diamond-shaped box sitting on a stand. So it's the diamond-shaped box for the Diamond Rough Cut. And people get it. They look at it, they're like, what is this? Oh, you know what? We have it in now. It's a one-time release. And it sells out. So, yeah, we don't want to do anything that the tobacconist isn't comfortable with. But we also want to make sure that we're giving the best presentation that we can for our brand. And so there's a kind of a fine line there. We try not to do crazy things. I mean, listen, if you think about it as a brand, right? You'd love to have 25 cigars per box and you'd like to have one row of 25 cigars, right? You'd love to have it this big if you could.
Oh yeah, picture perfect every time, right?
Right, you'd love to do that because the chances of somebody's hands falling in your box get greater, right? And then if you look at from the tobacconist side, they'd love to have 20 cigars vertically so they can just stack and stack and stack. So there's a balance there. You know, you want to, again, because people are buy visually, you want people to look at your artwork and think your artwork is beautiful because from 10 or 20 feet away, that's what they see. And then you get to, you know, your presentation within arm's length and what does your band look like and what are the details that you're putting in? And that has to be pleasing as well. So, yeah, I mean, fine and rare is not a standard box. It's pretty wide. It only holds 10 cigars, but again, it's an annual release. It lasts very short time on the shelf. And I think people are happy to have it. And so that's, you know, our core lines fit in a standard, more of a standard type situation for tobacconists. But our annual releases, I just feel like, hey, we want to do everything that we can to give the right presentation to the consumer. So
you mentioned your core line there, Alan, and I think that that's something that, that I've always, what I've really admired about your marketing and your presentation of your cigars is, and we mentioned earlier in the conversation tonight about being, you know, you wanting to make Lars more Alec Brand, Bradley centric. And I think what's really interesting about quote unquote, and I'm using the little quote fingers for people who are listening, Alec Bradley centric, is that you put your own, you put a very unique stamp on every single cigar. You use very bright, vibrant colors. There's an aesthetic to even the cigars. If we take Black Market, for example, the boxes are very rustic, as you know, and it's very, if someone were to imagine what Black Market something would look like, that's the box they picture in their head, you know, of whatever. It could be cigars or it could be whatever. But, and then, you know, I go back to the Mundial, which I just personally just love the, I love the blend. I love the cigar. And just the very vibrant colors, the beautiful logo of the Tempest, the Prensado. Coop had featured a picture of that box, and I think he has it there next to him. Just very regal. There's just a lot of vibrancy, but each core line has its own distinct characteristics while still holding true to Alec Bradley centric and branding. And so I think that's something that you more than most and maybe arguably probably better than anyone else does incredibly well. And that obviously has to be at the center of your thought processes for each new release, correct?
Correct. So it's truly one of the most difficult parts of what we do as a company. And that is to make the consumers comfortable by knowing it's an Alec Bradley product. So there are certain guidelines that we try and stick to. On the other side of that, if you look at Prensado and Tempest and let's just say Connecticut, they all fall under this one more traditional style. Then you take Magic Toast, you take Black Market, you take Max, and those are completely different. And the reason that we do that is because there is a, for me to continue to be excited about coming in here every day, I don't want to lose the ability to be creative. And when I see something, I have a vision as to what I want it to be. And I don't want to be stuck to certain guidelines to be able to achieve that. So if you look at Magic Toast, I mean, that is completely off the charts for what we do. It's completely out of our lane when it comes to being a traditional style Alec Bradley product. But that cigar is kicking ass. I mean, it is what it is. And the packaging works for the brand. And that's what's more important. You know, I think that if you use the Alec Bradley name, it doesn't matter what your color combination is. It doesn't matter what your font style is. That doesn't always have to be the same. It just has to be the most appealing that we can bring it out to market with. And that's always been my rule. It's like, hey, if red doesn't work or blue doesn't work or that font doesn't work, change it. So it's the best thing that we can bring to the consumer so that we can make him the most comfortable and the most excited and the most emotionally engaged with our brand.
Speaking of creativity, Coop, if I can digress, there's something I've always wanted to ask you. The creativity, the Texas Lancero, being from Texas,
I love that, by the way.
No, very creative project. I'm going to be very specific with my question. You ran an advertisement that was run in several publications where you were pictured with the Texas Lancero surrounded by a lot of bikers, and it was just a very, very eye-catching advertisement or anything. Were those actors or were they actual bikers? Who came up with this idea and how did that all come to be? I've always wanted to ask you this.
Okay, Bear, you're going back right now.
Yes.
you're heading into the archives right now.
He's the historian of our show, Alan.
I can see Coop. okay, so I have to tell you, Barry, it's funny that you brought that up because it's probably it's probably the coolest story for me in our company when it came to putting an ad campaign together in print. So we wanted to do something that was going to be uniquely different for Alec Bradley, right? And if in that ad, you had all these Harleys and all these bikers, and I was in a suit with camouflage chukka boots on, sitting on a Honda 90. Okay. And
I remember the shoes.
Yeah. But it was all about our tagline, which is Live True, which is about being true to yourself.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so that was, hey, you know, as long as you're living your life, your truest life, we just want to be a part of that. So that was what that represented. It happens to be that every person that sat behind me or stood behind me in that ad is either was former law enforcement, okay, or some type of former federal agent. So there's a guy, if you're looking at the ad, over, he'd be over my left shoulder, but to the right of me, that used to protect the president.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So these were all, this is a biker group that was made up of all former law enforcement guys.
Like I said, or
federal agents. And he, let me tell you what it took to get him out there, which was so cool. I said, we're going to have free food and free beer and as many cigars as you can smoke and just come out and you're going to be in an ad campaign. And that was it. I mean, they all came out in droves. It was the greatest. It was one of the coolest shoots that I was ever involved in. Just because they were real people. I still keep in touch with a lot of them. And they were just great people, man. And I'll tell you, I walked up individually and thanked them all for their service and everything they've done for us, done for their communities. And they were amazing. And it was just, it was a cool shoot and they loved it. A lot of them took that ad and framed it. It's in their motorcycle clubs.
That's awesome.
And then we donated cigars to their motorcycle clubs. Then we sent ashtrays to everybody, you know, for everybody so that when they're together, that, you know, they could always go back and remember that time that we were together. So it was really cool.
Hey, thank you for that, Alan. I knew there had to be a story and it was even more unique than I thought it was going to be. That's awesome. Oh man, that's terrific.
Yeah, and actually, the funny thing is, we shot it at a biker bar in the parking lot of a biker bar, which was that was so cool because it was like they were right in their element and they just kind of let me into their element. It was pretty neat.
That is really cool. Yeah. Do you have the ad somewhere?
Yeah.
Yes, I do because I keep way too many cigar publications.
I got to look at that one again because I haven't seen it in a while. That's why I want to.
I'll bust it. I'm sure I have it somewhere.
Yeah. I remember it, but yeah, I was just trying to Google it. I couldn't find it. So I was like, yeah, but we will have to definitely check that out for sure.
Oh, it's great. It's
Barry. I'll say one other thing that's pretty funny. I got a call from a publisher of a magazine who said, who came up with that? And I said, I did. He's like, no, really?
Oh, that's awesome.
That's when you say, listen, bud, it's amazing what free beer and food and cigars will give you these
can
days.
Do.
Just
correct.
Magic. Just magic.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, that is great. That's a
and
great
the funny story. And the funny thing is that a couple of guys in the group were from an Irish biker club that came out. And they hit me up for the next 2 or 3 years for the Hooligans.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So that was kind of neat.
That is cool. So another project that came out last year, I think it was really the cigar that it caught a lot of us by surprise, Project 40. And sensational cigar, Alan. I mean, that was another cigar where you guys went a little out of your comfort zone with that cigar. And to me, it was a home run.
Yeah, again, Coop, I mean, you know, again, so you have brand guidelines that you try and stick to, you know,
right.
Because you want you want the consumer again to feel comfortable, but this was a situation that said, hey, we need to go out of our traditional guidelines and we need to make what we feel is the best product that we can bring to market and present it the best way we can to market. And Project 40 just kind of evolved. I mean, I don't know if you know the story behind Project 40 and what it represents, but you know, this was about having somewhat of a, having pleasure with no restrictions, which if you think about it, I know you talk about the price on that cigar. It's very price friendly
yeah.
consumers. And it's a spectacular cigar. It's not over packaged, but it's packaged properly. And everything just kind of aligned. The stars aligned on that brand. And you know, I guess, unfortunately, you know, we're out of inventory of that cigar right now, but you know, it's something that the brick and mortars have, you know, our retailers have truly embraced. And, you know, sometimes things just go, you know, go your way. So.
Yeah, no, that's true. But it was, you know, like I said, it really, it was under a series called the Experimental Series. Experiment went very good is what I could just tell you. that was just a sensational cigar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're working on another experimental series, another component to the experimental series right now, which is going to be neat. We're using some tobaccos that we haven't used before. The whole thing is going to be a pretty neat project for us.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful as well.
Alan, if you wouldn't mind enlightening our audience a little bit about the story, because to my understanding, Project 40, I don't know the connection, so I'm asking for myself and our audience, but it has to do with something about pursuing your one's own happiness, right? That's the mantra behind it. Can you enlighten us a little bit?
Yeah, correct. So what happens is they've determined through studies that, you know, happiness and pleasure, you know, if you look at 100% of happiness and pleasure in somebody's life, that 50% of it is genetic, is inherited, and then 10% is environmental. And the other 40% you control. The other 40% you're in control of. And so what the idea was behind it is that if you look at things that bring pleasure to people, right? People find pleasure in food, certain types of food that they eat that kind of touch them, music, spirits, you know, something that brings them kind of to another level, another place. And I felt cigars, you know, cigars should be in that group because I think cigars transform an experience. I'm a true believer that when people are together, the cigar should not be the leading character, should not be the leading role, right? In that experience. The cigar is there as a supporting role, is that it should be about the people, it should be about the conversation, it should be about the overall experience, and everyone just bonds over the cigar. And so, but I felt like cigars keep people there, keep people in their seats, and keep people together. And so I said, hey, how do we create a product that people will enjoy, that has got a good price point so there's no resistance, and you know, that we package so people know that we care, but not so overly ornate in its packaging. And we tried to just make something very accessible. And I remember speaking with Abe from Smoke Inn, and Abe is like, as soon as I saw this, I knew this was a home run. That was it.
Wow, if you got that from Abe. If you got that feedback from Abe, that's a very big compliment.
Yeah.
Because Abe's always a skeptic, you know.
You know, listen, Abe is a professional tobacconist.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, there's a lot of hobbyists out there, but Abe is a professional tobacconist. And for him to say, the second I saw it, I knew it was a home run, that went along with how that cigar was already moving. So he kind of already felt it. Well, he said, as soon as I saw it, I knew. And so that was the whole process behind Project 40, was you control 40% of your happiness. We want to be a part of that. This cigar should be a part of that if you're a cigar smoker.
So, Alan, the late Stuart Scott was known for certain phrases. And one of my favorite of his was, you know, cool as the other side of the pillow. And you've always struck me as a person who embodies that. With this trade show, you guys ventured out, as we already discussed, to two different ways outside of your comfort zone. One with Lars, as we've already discussed, and then this with, you know, a value price cigar. You know, from a comfort perspective, you've brought that word up several times tonight, making the consumer comfortable. How comfortable were you at the 2019 trade show, where you were making this huge, you know, diversion from, you know, from what you'd done for so long in two different directions?
Yeah, not that comfortable there.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, because I know what we do well, and I know where it's brought us as a company. We're very fortunate. You know, Alec Bradley has great momentum, and so to do some things that were completely outside the box of what we do, it's a bit uncomfortable. But I don't think there's real growth within your comfort zone. I think the growth is going outside your comfort zone to figure out, what more can I do? Where can I find additional levels of success? Where can I find that feeling like, hey, this worked? You know, my idea had validity to it. And it's easy to just stay in your comfort zone and do iterations off of what you do. But I think the real growth is outside your comfort zone. And we're very fortunate in the fact that, you know, the Lars component of that worked. Project 40, like I said, unfortunately, we're out of stock right now, but Project 40 has been an amazing home run for us. And so I think the other part of that is that, in some way, with both my kids in the business, you know, Alec and Bradley have to learn what their comfort zone is and then what it means to get out of their comfort zone as well. And so I push them to say, I know this is where you want to go. Did you explore this? Have you looked at that? And they're very open to it. And I mean, I can tell you that I ask a lot of questions. Did you look at it this way? Who is the consumer we're trying to reach? You know, all of those questions. And that happened. It was those questions that brought us to do Lars. And it was those questions that brought us to do Project 40. Who are we trying to reach? You know, what is the message that we're trying to convey to the consumers? What more can we do and expand as a company, not just within where we live, but outside of where we live, to bring more people, more eyes to our brand? So that was kind of the precipice behind what we did.
Well, you certainly received the validity, particularly with Project 40, getting a top 25 in its first year on the market in the last year's Cigar Aficionados top 25 cigars. And I just finished my very first one, which was actually the size that won the honor, the Toro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting about quote unquote value price cigars. And I think there's a lot of examples, and this certainly falls into that category of it. Value price doesn't mean that it certainly lacks complexity or that it lacks nuance and everything. This cigar is chock full of complexity. I've really enjoyed this experience and speaking with you while I'm smoking it. It's taken me all over the place. Yeah. in a good kind of way. You know, like, there are kind of cigars that are definitely disjointed. This isn't one of them, but it's incredibly complex, and I'm really enjoying this cigar. This is fantastic. So, you have to, I know you're obviously thrilled with the success of that. So it's going outside the comfort zone. Certainly proved well.
It's very funny, Bear, because what you're talking about, that kind of brings me back to a story early in my career. It's just the way people think, and it's quite interesting. And that is, I remember we launched a cigar, and depending on the price, right? When depending on where your price falls, is you know, someone to say, yeah, that's a great cigar. I wish it was $5. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's an $8 or $9 cigar. I love that cigar. I wish it was $5. And then if you make it $5, you're like, yeah, not bad for a $5 cigar.
Yeah, the worst.
There's kind of like that no-win situation. But yeah, I mean, we just felt like we're not going to allow Project 40 to not do everything it can do because of price. You know, and we felt there was a good market for us there and that we hadn't explored it. So that was our opportunity.
When you started that story, I thought that was going to be a bogey stogie story.
Yeah. As my kids will say, my dad started with a lot of cheesy taglines.
I'm still on the hunt for that cigar, man. I've asked the boys several times, and they say that none of them exist. I'm still on the hunt for it.
Bring it back.
Even if they do exist, I can't tell my kids because then they'll smoke them. But I actually think potentially there's like one or two bundles back from 15, 18 years ago that I
bought. Oh, my gosh. That'd be awesome.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I don't know if I could find them, but I think they're
I've been looking. I have a few connections of people who, as the audience knows, and Coop knows, I'm a huge aging nerd anyways. And I have a few contacts that are just as much, if not more so, aging nerds than I. And so I'm still on the lookout for it. I would love to try one.
Yeah.
How's this? If I find them, I'll send a couple out to you.
There you
man. Oh man. Straight from the source. I love it. Thank you.
And I bet you they're good. I bet you they're really good.
Yeah, they're at this point, 18 years later, going to be a bit mild, but
yeah.
They should be well balanced.
Yeah. You know, you spoke about going out of the comfort zone, and there was a third area you kind of already touched on. It was Gatekeeper. I know that was the project that your boys did, but it was still kind of under the whole Alec Bradley family, and that was another kind of different direction working with Ernesto. I know you've worked in the Dominican Republic before, but you hadn't worked with Ernesto. Something different again. And that cigar, I liked it. Everyone, very well received cigar actually last year. I think a lot of people was really, it was a nice sophomore effort by the boys on that to follow up their first release.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I couldn't be more proud of the boys, right? Think about it. You have an opportunity in this business to make your own name. Again, out of the comfort zone, right? And my boys chose to do that on their own. They could have stayed with me, kind of had me influence them in terms of blend, style, wear, packaging, whatever it may be. And they didn't do it. They said, we're going to do, you know, I told them, do your own thing. You've got to know what that, if it works, you have to know what success feels like. And if it fails, you need to know what that feels like too. That's where your growth is. And so I have a very long, beautiful friendship with Ernesto. I mean, he's the salt of the earth. And we've always tried to be there for one another. And he wanted to work with the boys, and the boys wanted to work with him. And so it was a natural, right? I mean, if you think about it, and I've said this before, you have an iconic, you know, Cuban maker in this business generationally, and then you have these two young guys, and culturally they have nothing in common except that they both are so passionate about the premium cigar, about the cigars. And so they wanted to work together, and I think, Coop, we even had this conversation. It's not an Alec Bradley and it's not an EPC.
No, it really isn't. That was what was amazing about it. I mean, it's a testament of the both of you guys on that, how that came out.
Yeah, I mean, they were very particular as to what they wanted to do. Ernesto was open to what they wanted to do. And Ernesto has an amazing brand and a great factory. And it was very symbiotic in terms of how they came up with the blend together. And, you know, listen, I couldn't be more proud that they chose to do it on their own, do it how they wanted to do it, the blend they wanted to do, the packaging they wanted to do, and it's working. And the cigar is doing very, very well. And it's just a testament to their passion for the industry, right? As they knew what they wanted, and they weren't going to take no for an answer. And that just says a lot about who they are as young men. So
I had mentioned it to Coop. I've said it several times, and I've said it to the boys as well, that I thought it was, if not the, it was one of the cigars of the show last year.
Yeah, a lot of us thought that. It was really, it was, like I said, I remember we had it up at the party, and I was really tired. So I thought it was a lot stronger originally than I thought. And then they say, no, you're probably just tired, right? But it's just it was great. It was like, you know, it was a perfect complement to Blind Faith, I thought, you know, a perfect follow-up to that, you know, just kind of getting something a little more medium plus, I thought, as opposed to Blind Faith being very full.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things the boys have done really well, even in their first two releases, is that they have shown that they're not kind of one-trick ponies in terms of blending, right? The blends that they have between Blind Faith and Gatekeeper, you know, again, different sides of the spectrum of in terms of flavor profile. So I think it's great that they said, we're going to bring out what we want to bring out. It doesn't have to follow this singular path. And you know, my only job was to kind of get out of their way in some respects, you know, like don't get in the way of success. And so it doesn't mean I didn't keep a close eye on everything they were doing, but I did try and get out of the way. And I have to tell you, if I could tell you one little story.
Yeah.
So the cigar was made and we had to go down to the Dominican, to the factory, to smoke the production before it went into packaging. And it was Bradley's birthday. And Brad and I flew down to the DR and picked up a bottle of Glenfiddich at duty free. And then the days that we were there, we were slammed. We were just busy all through the day and then dinner at night. And then by the time we got back, you know, they were like 12, 14 hour days. We were exhausted. And so the night before we were leaving, I said, Brad, we have a full bottle of Glenfiddich. We're either going to pop it for your birthday and have a toast, or we're going to donate it to somebody who's going to enjoy it. He's like, okay, listen, we're going to go outside of the hotel. We're going to watch some basketball on my computer and we're going to open up the bottle. And we had to be up at like, we had to be up at 5 a.m. to catch the flight.
Oh,
and I
God.
Think we, God, I hope my wife is not watching this. And I'm surely not going to get Father of the Year. And at 4 a.m., I said to Brad, if you pour me another drink, I swear to God, I'm going to kill you. And he's like, listen, there's one drink left in the bottle. It's not going to be there. And he poured it. And like 4 a.m., we went up, packed our bags, showered, went back downstairs, caught the van over to the airport. And so that's how we spent his birthday. And it was an amazing bonding time between my son and I.
Beautiful story.
Yeah, it was great.
Beautiful story. And the boys have another project they've announced, the Kintsugi, that's coming out, I guess, sometime a little later this year.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, again, everything gets pushed back just a bit. But Kintsugi was, again, a cool project in its own way for what it represents. I don't know if you know kind of the story of how that came up, what Kintsugi is and how it came up and what it represents. But Kintsugi is the art of taking something that was beautiful that maybe was broken and putting it back together with gold lacquer and to become more beautiful than its original form. And, you know, Alec and Bradley sit in on a lot of, I ask them to sit in on a lot of the meetings that I'm in and the conference calls. And, you know, I sit on the board, advisory board position of the PCA. And then I sit as a board member on CRA. So a lot of times I'll have them come in and hear what's going on. And Bradley came to me and said, you know, Dad, the industry in its own way is a little bit fractured, right? You know, there's certain companies that are in one direction, another set of companies in another direction. And then just because mass market cigars are called cigars, that's another direction. And we're a bit fractured. And so this line for Alec and Bradley represents the fact, you know, somewhat of this industry that we are more beautiful kind of together than we would be apart. And again, being broken is one thing, but being able to come back, you know, properly is better for everybody. And it's kind of a more beautiful outcome. So that was the basis behind Kintsugi.
Hear, hear.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I was actually starting to look up some of that artwork when it came out, and it is an amazing form of artwork when you see what they do with filling in those cracks with the gold and stuff. And it is something I didn't know about this type of art until this cigar. So I just thought it was a very creative idea. And they're going back to Reyes Cubanas for this blend too. So it's, you know, So, you know, so that's exciting too, you know, way, you know, doing, still working with the core factor, one of the core factories you have. So that's great news.
Yeah. And again, their blend, the blend is done. The production is done. And now I think they're finishing up whatever the final touches are on the artwork. And we still have to find out, you know, where our printing partners are in terms of being open, what their capacities are, you know, those type of things. So again, probably going to be a bit of a delay, but it's going to come out this year for sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
Bear, you have anything else on the lines?
Yeah. So I had a question. So with Gatekeeper being so well received, do you think there's a pathway, an opportunity, and with your close personal relationship with Ernesto to have an Alec Bradley, not Alec Bradley, but an Alec Bradley project to collaborate with Ernesto sometime in the future?
That would be, listen, I'm open to it. All right. I mean, again, the relationship that we have together dictates that could happen. Right. It's not like I have to introduce myself or we need to get to know one another. Yeah, we could do that. But I think fortunately for Ernesto, you know, coming off so many high ratings, that he's very busy. And I know there's a lot of people knocking on his door right now, you know, to do lines for him. And we just are not comfortable as a company being kind of one of those. That's not who we are.
Yeah.
So though the relationship dictates that we could do something together and it would probably be pretty fluid and easy to do, he's doing his own thing right now and he's very successful at it. And there's a lot of people that are asking him to make cigars. And until we found, you know, if the timing was right, we already know that Ernesto is open to blending ideas and things that we could bring. And, but it just, I don't know the timing is optimum right now. But it doesn't mean that something in years to come that we couldn't do something together.
I asked this question of Alec a couple of nights ago, and I think you just answered the question with your answer to that question, based on a lot of people already knocking on that door. But you know, so many people are working with AJ Fernandez right now. I was just curious to see if that would ever be a possibility for Alec Bradley as well. But I think you just answered that question. So
yeah, I mean, again, you know, again, AJ's doing a phenomenal job. And a lot of the brands that you see on, you know, these boutique-y type companies are making with AJ, and he makes a great cigar. And here's the cool thing. You know, I speak no Spanish. AJ speaks no English. But when we see each other, it's like a hug and a kiss. You know, there's a relationship there. And it's not that I wouldn't do something with him, but it just doesn't make sense. We have a lot of phenomenal tobacco at Raíces. Our relationships are very much set. And I'm not really good at being one of, you know, being one of 10 or 20 or 30 and, you know, just kind of getting lost in the mix. It's not our style. So I love AJ. Doesn't mean that, again, something in the future couldn't happen. If he comes to me with the right tobacco, doesn't mean I wouldn't work with him. He came to me actually with one of the tobaccos. He's like, you know, we were actually in at the Dortmund show in Germany. And he hands me a cigar and he's like, I want you to smoke this. But, you know, and I smoked it. I love the tobacco. And I said, how much, you know, basically, how much do you have? Because we have to make sure if we're going to do something, there's enough for productions. And he told me, and it ended up, he did that tobacco with somebody else. Because it just wasn't for, you know, we just couldn't bring it out properly. But again, great tobacco. And he does a great job. You got to be proud of what AJ's built.
For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we already kind of, I guess, touched on some of this. You know, obviously COVID-19 has, you know, it's affected some of the production schedules and some things going on. What is currently, though, the status of the factories in Honduras right now? Are they operational? Are they going to be operational soon?
Yeah. Some are open already. Some are not. You have to get an approval from the government before you can open up. We're actually at Raíces. We're opening up tomorrow. We're going to start productions again tomorrow. And then we're going to go to 50% capacity on Monday. Again, they gave, I think, a 50 or 55 page document the government did as to here are the steps that you need to take to, you know, to be in compliance. So we're going to start, I think, 50% capacity on Monday. And then by the end of the week or beginning of the following week, we're going to run to 100% capacity, but in double shifts. I think that's the plan right now.
Well, that's good news. There's some light then that you guys are going to start seeing some stuff. That is good news.
Yeah. Look, as much as, you know, I mean, we're in a back order situation. The last thing I want is for, you know, the factory to close down. But that being said, the health and the well-being of the people that are employed there are paramount to the production. And, you know, I know that Nicaragua, I think, did not close down, and it was voluntary. But I think the responsible owners, the responsible factory owners there, did close down for a period of time, gave their people a chance to make sure that they weren't sick, and then maybe brought them back. And I, you know, I don't know what everyone did exactly, but I think that if you care about your workers and you care about the people that are there, you have to make sure that you're not putting a sick person next to somebody who's healthy.
No, very true. Very true. How are things going on the sales team end of things? Are your sales team going to be getting back on the road soon?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We it's so funny because we made it mandatory that they not be on the road.
Right.
And yet we have a pretty diverse sales team, an amazing group of people. And, you know, one guy who's a little bit older, who's been through a lot, he was like, hey, listen, I'm not staying home. I'm going out. We're like, listen, okay. You know, you have to follow at least your state guidelines or the CDC. And if they're telling you don't go out, I mean, I can't make you stay home, but we don't want you out working on our behalf during this time. We'd rather you be healthy, make your calls, do what you can. And it happens to be that we were very fortunate. Our sales staff did a great job. They have great relationships. And because we have such great momentum at brick and mortar, we still wrote a good amount of business. So, you know, they're now hitting the road. They're now starting to hit the road. I think 60 to 70% of our sales staff is hitting the road. The others will probably hit the road in the following week. But, you know, the one thing they know is we're very fortunate. We had a record first quarter, you know, and then in April, though it wasn't a record April for us, it was still up from where we anticipated. And that was a great combination of brick and mortars who were still supporting us, you know, and filling in, and the internet catalog guys who were busy. It was a great combination for us. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you and I were on a virtual Hereford, one of my local retailers. You guys have been leveraging the virtual piece as well and doing a fantastic job with that. The funny thing is the guys we were on with Tailored Smoke, that was the first time they ever did that. You want to talk about them being nervous. That's why they had me on. I'm like, and they were fine. I'm like, I knew they'd be fine. Now they're like pros at it. Right. Yeah. But they're like, no, we need you on. I said, nah, you guys are fine. You guys will do good. So, I mean, and that was good. I mean, that was some creativity we saw out of your sales team and your staff and you kind of getting it. And I know they really appreciate it because these guys were really going through a tough time because they're a bar. So they just could not open. And they're in a downtown area where, curbside doesn't work for them. So it was very difficult they were in right now. I know they really appreciated it.
Yeah, I mean, as a company, the one thing we said, I mean, look, you could have taken this time over the last 7 or 8 weeks, whatever it is, to think you were on a paid vacation, right? Because we didn't let anybody go. We kept our entire staff both on the road and here in the office, as well as down at the factories. And we said, look, this is not a paid vacation. You still have to make sure that every one of your accounts knows that you're there for them and whatever the needs are. So when Tailored Smoke called and said, will you do this? There was no choice. We wanted to do it. We wanted to be a part. We wanted to do what we could to help. And our guys have been, our entire staff has been all over it in terms of the virtual HERFs and the Zoom calls, just to make sure we're there supporting any way we can.
one of the other things you guys did, and this it got a lot of publicity, and this was just a really – this was a great story. What you did for the factory workers, you know, basically working like feed them and stuff, that was, you know, that was a beautiful thing to see, you know. And it's the cigar industry takes a lot of hits, and I think this is the stuff sometimes that people in the outside world, they don't see that side of the cigar industry, unfortunately. So, you know, I just wanted to really give you some props on that. That was a very great thing you guys did.
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting to preach family and then not take care of family, right?
Right.
It would it'd be pretty much a contradiction in terms for us. As you know, like you said, when you come here, right, you know, you said like wearing out my welcome. No, it's like we're together. It's like family coming back in town. So we're together and we want to make the most of that. And it's the same. And, you know, our factory is very important. All of our people there are very important. And one of the things in conversation that happened was, is that, hey, even if you pay them, the food wasn't available. So we said, well, what do we do? And I called the president of another cigar company who's in Nicaragua. And I said, how are you taking care of your people? Like, what are you doing? And he said, yeah, we're going to feed them. I literally couldn't hang up fast enough. I was like, okay, thank you. Hung up the phone. And that was it. Now we got on the phone and got to a wholesale food distributor. And we added up everybody that was associated with our company, from the factory to the box factory, to all of our people in the farms. And there's a small school for underprivileged kids that we support at, you know, year round. And we added up everybody, and it was like 700 families. And we just said, let's feed them for the next 30 days. And so we figured on, you know, families of four, and we just fed 700 families for 30 days. Cause we thought, you know, if we don't take care of them now, what are we doing? What is this all about? So it wasn't really an option in its own way. It was something that we felt was the right thing to do. And that's what we did. But I think, Coop, to be honest with you, I think there were a lot of companies in the cigar industry that took care of their people.
That is true. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is true. Yeah. That is true. Maybe yours was a little more unique in the way it would happen, but yeah, I think, and that's something, like I said, you know, with the bad press the cigar industry gets with the outside world, this is the side that no one sees, unfortunately. So it was, you know, it was a good thing. And like you said, it was a natural thing that you did and that the industry people have done.
Yeah. I mean, you know, taking care of the factory was one thing, right? That we have to, you know, that was important to me, but taking care of the people at the box factory, that was important to me. You know, that's something that maybe others, you know, maybe not have thought of, you know, like those people too have a, you know, that we keep employed. And then the farmers, you know, the farmers are out there every day, and what were they going to do for food? So we did that. The school is very close to my heart. You know, all these small little kids, you know, how are their families going to feed them? So that was paramount for us.
Beautiful.
So yeah, it felt good to do. I'm sure I got more out of it than they did.
Good. That's wonderful. And then kind of one last thing that kind of I thought was a little interesting. This is a little lighter. This is something I didn't expect to see from Alec Bradley at all. You guys ran a podcast with Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Did you know Larry the Cable Guy? That's just something like a little bit different. We wouldn't expect Alec Bradley to do that. And that was a nice thing.
Yeah, and the best part is that if you know him, his name is Dan Whitney. If you know Dan, he was going to take over as soon as he got on air. he was going to control the entire conversation. Yeah, so I met him some years ago. Like, I got a call like 8 years ago or something from his manager and said, hey, he's doing a show like an hour and 15 minutes from you. And he'd like to meet you. Would you go out and see him? And it was on a Sunday night. I drove an hour and 15 minutes, went backstage. We met, we just hit it off. And he said, will you stay for the show? And I'm like, listen, Dan, I'm so happy to meet you. You're just the coolest guy, but I have like an hour and 15 minute drive back. And he said, well, do me a favor. If you decide to stay, take my number and then text me. And then we'll have a cigar, you know, at the end of the show. But halfway through the show, it was a Sunday night. I had to be at work in the morning. And I texted him, hey, you know, just when you finished, great show, whatever. And I left. But what he did do, which was really nice, was he actually put Alec Bradley in the routine.
Oh, wow.
Which I wasn't expecting. And so we had always kept in touch since then. And he's got a phenomenal foundation called the Get Her Done Foundation, of which he started the foundation by donating $5 million himself. Him and his family donated $5 million to the foundation, and they have raised millions of dollars for hip dysplasia for people. Everyone knows about hip dysplasia in animals, but they don't know why it occurred. And he created like the worldwide area to go if you have, you know, if someone is diagnosed with that. And we've always supported his events and the Get Her Done Foundation, and we've always remained friends. And the last time I was out in Lincoln, Nebraska at Capital Cigar doing an event, his buddy Tim called me up and said, you know, Dan's not coming out, but I'm picking you up. We're going to the house. And we went to his place. It's not a house. It's like a compound. And and we hung out and we played golf on a simulator and he drank whiskey and smoked cigars and just had a great time. And so I called him up. I'm like, listen, Dan, you know, the boys are going to do this live podcast type thing, and I would love you to be a part. And he's like, okay, tell me when it is. And that was it.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. But you know, I have to tell you, he's as down to earth and as cool as you would think somebody should be. You know, he doesn't consider himself a celebrity. He's not that kind of a guy. He's a family man. And, it was just a lot of fun. And I know Alec and Bradley are working on some other special guests for another podcast they're going to do. So, yeah. And, you know, the week before we had the global ambassador and the U.S. ambassador for Glenfiddich that they did something with.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were on with our friends at Developing Palettes, Aaron and his team.
Yeah.
Alec was on. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, again, Dan has taken all of his success, and he's taken the Larry the Cable the Guy character and taken that whole piece and done a lot of great things with it.
He really has.
His philanthropy.
That's great. Yeah. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Bear, anything else on COVID stuff?
No, I think we covered it.
All right. Let's turn our attention to some more polarizing topics. let's talk about the trade show.
Well, don't set it, tee it up like that. We're going to have some fun, Alan. That's what we're going to do.
Thank you, Bear.
So, Alan, I guess I'll ask the question. Do you think this trade show is going to happen?
No, I don't. No. I don't. I think we're past that point in time that would be very difficult for companies to be able to get everything together. Remember, if people release at the trade show, you just have factory closures. You know, Dominican, I think, is still closed, right? So,
or some factories are still closed down. Yeah, mm-hmm. Some are open.
Right. So how do you launch a product in terms of timing when you just took right at the time that you'd be getting product ready for the show, and now that's over, how do you bring product to market for a trade show? So I think that's an issue. I think tobacconist getting on a plane is an issue. So, and I also think, you know, I think there's two schools of thought here, Coop, right? You'd say, okay, in some way we need a trade show for the industry for a lot of reasons. One is it raises money, and PCA takes that money to support us in terms of litigation and legislation. So you do need something. The other side of that is that the show was not at its best. So if you don't have a show this year, you can actually take that time to revamp the show the way you want it and make it a better show. Right?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I think there's, I think, again, two schools of thought on this. And that is, there's an opportunity here right in front of you, if you're the PCA, to make this the show you want it to be. The other side of that is you still have financial issues that need to be addressed. And that is, I mean, I can tell you right now between, again, I sit on PCA and I sit on CRA, I think we're $5.6 million into a lawsuit. How is that being paid for?
Right.
And the industry, how the industry participates is by attending the trade show, right? They take a lot of those funds and put that in the pot to pay for the litigation, to pay for all the legislative efforts that they do. So, yeah, I'm hoping PCA decides not to do the show this year, but finds another way to bring everyone together, you know, a more creative way. What's your thought? By the way, what's your thought on that? I mean, you attend the show.
Look, yeah, I'll give you my thought, and then Bear can go in. I think they need to, like, when they made the decision, when they made the announcement back in March about, hey, the show's on, I got it. Right. I thought, okay, it's early enough. There's some time. Let's not push a panic button yet and ice everything. But that was before, like, the NBA shut down, the NCAA tournament was canceled, and you know, basically shelter in place happened, right? And that
20,
happened
24 hours before, like, literally worst timing 20, ever.
Yeah, they I feel bad. They have bad timing sometimes.
Terrible timing.
They couldn't ask for worse time. So, like, 10 days later into this, I'm like, I don't know how they're going to have – I don't know how they're going to have this trade show. Now, you know, I'm looking at some of the what the Nevada Gaming Commission's put out there that are going to be things that have to be followed by the casino properties. You know, if the 250 cap limit on a convention is truly going to be there, I don't know how you have it, but the hits that the retailers and manufacturers have taken right now, I don't know necessarily if this is a time for our industry to have and I still look at the PCA trade show with all its problems as a celebratory thing for our industry.
It is.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it right now. But now I also think, and I'll be curious on Bear's opinion, Alan's opinion on this. We're now within that 60-day window. And I understand there's probably contractual issues at play here, but you're within 60 days. And I don't think anyone believes that the trade show is going to happen. So I think the longer this drags out, the worse it's going to be for PCA right now.
Bear, what's your thought on that?
Well, Coop and I have discussed this at length and before, both on show and off, and I've shared my opinion with several of my guests on my show. And I think with every day that passes creates a much bigger problem for all parties involved. And, you know, considering it from all angles, like, how can my contention is how can the show go on as scheduled and emerge what we would deem even a remote success? I mean, you mentioned from a brand perspective, brand ownership and manufacturing perspective, manufacturing is shut down in some countries. It was shut down for a period of time in others. I mean, that really limits the ability to present these products that normally you as companies would be able to present them and release them. I mean, mm-hmm. You can put together some samples in a box just fine, probably. That's not what we're talking about. But your entire distribution schedule, your entire release schedule has been thrown in the trash. I mean, you're starting from scratch in a lot of ways. And so that's one of a dozen problems. From a media perspective, you know, which Coop and I herald from, how do we provide to our audience good coverage? You know, because our coverage relies upon relationships and communication. And I mean, how do you do that through masks, and how do you do that from 6 feet apart when we're and we've gone into this before, you know, we're not a priority item at the we're not the highest priority of what goes on at the PCA trade show. That is a business convention. You were there to sell cigars. Mm-hmm. Tobacconists there to purchase cigars, to plan their business out for the year and everything. You know, how do we provide it? How do we provide quality coverage, let alone adequate coverage of that? And then from the tobacconist perspective, you know, they've been shut down. Some completely in the case of Tailored Smoke, some to just minimal sales. In terms of Michael's Tobacco, where I happen to work, it's down to curbside servicing. And for the foreseeable future, it is. Texas has opened up a little bit, but we're not staffed to be able to do it under the regulations and the guys that they've limited. I mean, we can't sit there and take the temperature of everyone that comes in. Operating at 25, even 25% capacity, which we're allowed to do, but still honoring social distancing, really limits the number of people we can have in our store. It's not a profitable venture. So, I mean, how can a cigar shop owner justify the cost to go to the trade show? Normally, that's always a point of contention. And then in the midst of all this economic strife, how can they justify those costs to go to a trade show? There's just so many moving parts to this, and all of them are just moving away from it. I just don't see how the trade show can happen. I don't know if it's a, I don't know. It's certainly not my call, at all. But I just don't think it can be, even a remote success.
Your point is well taken, right? So if you look at what this trade show is, right? So the manufacturers show up because that's where the tobacconists are going to be. And the tobacconists show up because that's where the manufacturers are going to be. So if the manufacturers show up and the tobacconists don't show up, one, they're trying to figure where they are financially, how much money are they going to have to be able to place orders, you know, and the cost involved in going, you're probably going to get a low tobacconist turnout. And so therefore, if the turnout's going to be low from the tobacconist side, why would the manufacturer show up? If the manufacturers don't show up because it doesn't make financial sense for them, why would the tobacconist show up? So I think that's the play that we have here. And I think that, like I said, you know, it's easy to see all the issues in front of it, but I think that there is opportunity. I think the opportunity to turn around and make this show what we hope it can be
totally
is right in front of us. And I think that, you know, again, I only sit as an advisory board position on the PCA, right? Which means I can only really give suggestions as to what I think, but I have, you know, I've made it known that I think there's great opportunity for us as an industry. All we have to do is make it more inclusive, be more transparent, bring everybody in, and put, you know, the best minds together to figure out what it is that we're trying to achieve. And I think that's right there. And I think now it's a forced reprieve, right? We probably can't have a show, right? If you think about it, Coop, I think you came out and I think you already put out there about that 250 person limit.
Yeah.
There's more than 250 people if no tobacconists show up.
Well, yeah. And the other thing I've been told is, I mean, obviously everything is subject to an exemption, but they're not going to give an exemption, right? Because this is such an early part of the reopening in Las Vegas. The mm-hmm. reality is, I think from people I talked to, they said this trade show is going to be right up against Vegas reopening. It would be, if a convention happens, it would be one of the first ones. So yeah, I don't see how they're going to do it. So are you as a company planning on, what are your plans right now as a company with this? Let's say they, for some strange reason, they have the show. I mean, someone said to me, maybe they have the show with just manufacturers, which would make no sense, right? Because why would manufacturers spend that kind of money to go there without their consumers there? You know, I've heard, you know, I don't think that would work either.
I don't know who said that.
This was not an industry person who said this to me. No, this was just this was not an industry person. Like, so I said, no, why would they go? This is not cheap to go there, right? They're not going to set up and then do this virtually from Vegas with no consumers. I said, I just don't see that. The point of being at the trade show is meeting your consumers in that vibe of the trade show of interpersonal connection. Yeah.
Coop, that would be like buying a ticket to a football game and then neither team shows up.
Right. Right. Exactly.
100%.
I don't see it. I don't still.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
The manufacturers show there because there's opportunity.
Right.
And without the opportunity, it doesn't make sense to show. But again, it doesn't mean that PCA can't get creative in finding ways. Remember that PCA is a tobacconist run organization.
Right.
And their main focus is to help tobacconists nationwide. And so if they can find a way creatively to help the tobacconists nationwide, and we can be a part of that, whether PCA decides to do, you know, a manufacturer type preview type thing, or, you know, there are deals that are run through PCA's website, whatever it may be, that they can help the tobacconist, that's what I think it's all about this year. I don't think that there's a physical trade show, in my opinion, that should happen. But it doesn't mean that you can't make PCA. Keep PCA relevant. Find a way to get back in this nationwide.
Right, I agree. I totally agree on that point.
So, and that's what I hope happens. And I hope that they are open to bringing new board members on. I hope they're open to, you know, you have this Boutique Cigar Association. I mean, there's a bunch of newer guys that are out there that want to be heard and they want a voice. And maybe there's a way to kind of corral that and bring that in. I think there's so many things that can be done. But the big issue is that if there's no trade show, we still have pending lawsuits with the FDA. You still have legislative actions that we're, you know, looking to pursue. How do you do that financially? I mean, I can tell you this. If every tobacconist donated $1,000 to PCA, and every manufacturer donated $10,000, whatever the numbers are. The numbers are not relevant. It just, and gave them a financial boost to continue to fight the fight and said, we're going to push the trade show off. I think that would be the best.
Yeah.
I think that would be the best decision to make.
I'd agree on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Alan, if in an alternate universe, mm-hmm. if back in March when they had prior to announcing it or whatever, they had said, Alan, this is your decision. This is your decision if whether or not the trade show should go on. Would you have called it by now, one way or another?
100%. But it's not my contract.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, 100%.
Like I said, alternate universe. So.
Okay, alternate universe? Yeah, I would have called it, because if you think a little bit down the line on this, you have tobacconists. And if you take the tobacconists into consideration, they're like, oh, wait a minute. They have to close. Financially, they have to be able to go and be able to buy product through the end of the year. And no one knows what's going on. No one knows how long this is going to last. So if you asked me back in March, should there be a show? My answer would have been no. Find an alternative way to be not only relevant, but to be useful and a great tool for your tobacconists.
How dangerous is it with every passing day and a decision isn't made? Because while the show is still on, I mean, by the record, mm-hmm. by for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. But how dangerous is it without, you know, with every passing day that a final decision hasn't been made to the industry as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a danger involved there. I think what happens is, I think people don't like uncertainty, right? People want some definitive answer. We're going to have it. We're not going to have it. But I think also you have to look at support. I don't think that anyone has an appetite right now to support a trade show. So I think that every day that passes is a day that it looks like PCA is not doing what they should do. And so, yeah, I think there's something about credibility there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And you know, with all the problems they've had, I just don't want to see that now added to their problems. that's my opinion on that, you know. So that's why I think they really do need to kind of address this, like, very – I mean, this – you're within 60 days now. Now you're in a window where it's, you know yeah. I'll say this, Alan. I haven't made it – I don't think there's going to be a trade show. If there's a chance there is, I haven't made that decision one way or another either. I know it sounds nuts for me to say that. But part of me is like, well, if there is a trade show under these very unique circumstances – and I think it's safe to be there, health, you know, health-wise. Mm-hmm. Do I want to miss an opportunity to see what this is going to be all about? Maybe it's lemons. Maybe it's lemonade out of lemons. So that's – and I've told Bear that. That's why I haven't made any decision to pull in or out of the trade show. I don't know if it's going to be safe there or not yet. And that's the first thing I have to figure out. And then if I – you know, if it is and Bear, you know, it thinks it's safe, you know, I wouldn't force him. But then we'll come to that second step. You know, but I don't think that's a scenario that I'm going to have to face, because I think this is going to get canceled.
So here's what I find interesting. Yeah. No matter what side of the industry you're on, right? If you're in the cigar industry, no matter what side, whether you're the media, manufacturer, whatever it may be, right? Tobacconist, we're all in the same boat together here. Yeah. We all are trying to think about that same decision as to what goes on.
Yeah.
The only thing in PCA's defense a little bit, is that, remember, they signed multi-year contracts to be able to have a show. You have to figure out, what does that mean, right? And that is, you know, how much money could they lose? Are you taking into consideration the safety of the people that would be attending? You know, there's a lot there. It's not just yes or no. I think there's a lot involved. And I think they're working through that. I think the delay in the show one way or another has a lot to do with it's a pretty complex issue that they're going through.
I would totally agree on that. That's why I'm like, well, like I said, there's a lot of things we could beat them up on hard sometimes, and we'll hit a couple of them in, but this is not a simplistic decision. There's a lot of parts in this, and
right.
Like I said, I was telling you before, I go through some things with my day job, and I know what some of these things are. So I understand that. It doesn't mean they don't need to, like, address this soon, but I understand it.
Let me put it to this way, because I know them. Again, I sit in a position that I get to hear some things firsthand, right? I know they're doing everything possible to be able to come up with the right decision and do it as expedient as possible. And again, I think there's certain steps that they have to take, and I know they're trying to figure it all out, but any decision that you don't have today or while we're on this live stream is not because they don't want it to, you know, make it, is that they have to follow the certain processes necessary to make sure that everyone's okay. I can tell you that. I mean, they're working, and listen, they're working hard, and they're not sleeping like the rest of us.
I bet. No, I no, bet too. Sure. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Let's want to hit this last big topic there.
Absolutely.
Do you want to lead this one? Because I think you had some good questions along the way with this.
Coop, do you have to set me up on everyone? Like, okay, this is a big question coming up. I mean,
we're gonna have some more fun, Alan. We're gonna have some more fun.
Yeah. This is
okay. I'm ready.
So, this is an interesting question, because I asked your son a similar question the other night. You know, when the before all this happened, you know, with mm-hmm. COVID-19 and everything, there was a really large decision that came out where four very prominent companies, manufacturers in the industry, mm-hmm. Decided to pull out. And so I asked Alec, and now I'll ask you the same question. And it might be a mixture of some answers and maybe emotions and everything. What were your initial reaction thoughts when you saw what we've come to refer to as the big four pull out of the trade show initially?
So see, the one thing, Bear, which is interesting, is that I'm pretty transparent, right, about everything. If you ask me a question, I'm going to give you the answer.
Yep.
And there's pretty much nothing off limits other than personal stuff. So I was aware that this was going to happen before it happened, because I was in all the preliminary meetings with the big four. I was in the meetings with them and had these discussions. So it wasn't a surprise to me, what occurred. If you understand where they're coming from, I think depending on their reasoning, then it makes perfect sense. One is the show had to be financially feasible for them. So if you said it's not financially feasible and so we can't attend, okay, that's a livable answer that we can all understand. If you think that maybe there were some political reasons why they didn't show, that's understandable, right? That sometimes we sit on different sides of the fence within the same industry. And that is, they maybe have some mass market interest. They have, you know, with Drew Estate, a flavor interest, right? That maybe wasn't being protected by Premium Cigar Association. There might've been a difference in terms of what everyone wanted to achieve. If PCA said, hey, we want to achieve this, and the Big Four said, look, this is where what we're trying to achieve, and they didn't align, that would be a reason for them to leave. And I think there were a lot of reasons why they didn't attend. And they have to make the best decisions for their company, no different from me making the best decision I can for our company. And so I was okay with it. I didn't take it personally, and I think some people did. I felt like they made the decisions that were the best decisions for them. Of course, it doesn't do everything that we need for the industry, right? Because every booth space that they take adds a little bit to the pot to fight the fight. But if they didn't believe in the fight, if their fight was different from our fight, why would they support it? Right? So there's a lot to think about as to what the reasons are. Either way, as an industry, you have to respect their decision that they made that was best for them. And I do. The other side of that is that if they're not going to be there, I'm going to make it an opportunity for me. Right? So we increased our sponsorship. We did a lot of things to give Alec Bradley more prominence if the show was taking place. So everyone had to decide individually, was it a good thing for them to, you know, go? How does that affect me positively, negatively? And ultimately everyone came up with their own answers individually, but wasn't really a shock. I respect them. I respect the powers that be. I've had individual conversations with all of them. And I think that if you want them back, if again, look at Kintsugi. Maybe if they didn't leave, Kintsugi wouldn't have happened. But right, because you know it was about fracturing of the industry, right? So, but I think again, look at opportunity. Don't look at the negative of it. Look at the opportunity. There's an opportunity if you make the best show that you can make, and it's financially feasible for companies to be there. By the way, all of those companies who had, like, you know, 200 booth space, and if it wasn't financially feasible, why not bring it down to 100 or bring it down to 50 where it was financially feasible? No one said you have to take out, you know, half a hall, right? You can bring it down. You can size it down.
It's my contention. Absolutely.
Cut your cost by 50% and now it's financially feasible. So maybe there were other reasons, right? Maybe there were other political reasons or whatever those things are. But if you want to bring the industry back together and the trade show is your vehicle to do so, then the only way to get them back is to make the best trade show that you can make. So where they turn around and say, we can't afford not to be there, right? We have to be there because that's where the industry is and we don't want to be left out. So it goes to my idea of, okay, they're gone. We're all going to be okay. But if you want them back, don't beg them to come back, right? It has to be their idea to come back. And I think that opportunity does exist.
Alan, you mentioned something a moment ago, and it's the first time a Cigar Insider manufacturer has actually said it. And that's something I've been screaming about since even before the pullout, which was, you know, specifically Drew Estate, you know, which has a very prominent flavored component to their portfolio. It's their bread and butter. It keeps the lights on. It does more than that. And they certainly have a legitimate gripe with that, because this industry has proven time and time again to offer that up as a sacrificial lamb, as I've mentioned several times. And if there was anyone, and Drew Estate is consummately and consistently been professional about it. They've never publicly been spiteful about that, even though they would be justified as so. But coming from your perspective as someone who just kind of launched into this piece of the market with Lars, is that a concern for you as well? You talk about opportunities, being presented to you now with every challenge that comes the way and everything. You know, what kind of opportunities or challenges does this face on to Alec Bradley with that same question being now asked of you too?
If I could paraphrase Rocky, right? Rocky has the Java line, very successful for him. And Rocky's answer always has been, I'd cut off my arm to save my body. Right? You know, the Rocky Patel core line and everything he does is a lot larger than what he does in Java. And Java is a very successful brand. But if he lost Java in the fight to keep Rocky Patel going, well, then so be it. Of course, you can't use that analogy with Drew Estate. Like you said, it's a huge part. If I had my choice, and I can tell you, sitting on the CRA and PCA, nobody wants flavors to go away. I can tell you right now, if we had zero regulation, we'd all be happy. But if it's not going to happen, if the government is dead set on removing certain components of this, you have to decide, when do you stop that fight? So, I mean, I can tell you from where I stand and all the conversations that we've had, and there's been a lot of them. Nobody wants to see Drew Estate hurt. Nobody wants to see, you know, Java hurt, or even let's say Tatiana does a flavor line. You know, whoever has it, nobody wants that to go away. We would love to have zero regulation, but it's not the society we're in today.
Yep.
And so if someone says, listen, you know, give me this and you'll survive, you have a decision to make. And it may not be the most popular decision to make because you don't want to lose any of it. But sometimes you have to, you know, you have to look at the hand that's dealt to you and figure out what's the best decision from there. You know, they always say, go to war with the army you have. And so, yeah, I can tell you, you know, John and I go back a very long way. And, you know, John has been so helpful to me, you know, in my early career. As a matter of fact, a side story is, you know, there were many years ago, John and I were going to open up a factory together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's a personal relationship. I don't want to see John hurt. You know, I don't want to see, you know, Glenn, who represents the company, Glenn Wolfson. No one wants to see them hurt. We'd love to see them continue to do, you know, what they're doing now and have the success that they're having. That's what we would all want. But it's not necessarily the hand that's dealt to us. And if someone says flavors need to go away for whatever political reason it is, then you have a decision to make. Mm-hmm. So it's not out of malice that we've taken this certain stance that we have. So, I mean, that's honest. That's real.
Well, it's just refreshing to hear, like I mentioned before, you're the first insider, you know, sitting as an advisory member, but being part of these conversations and being a manufacturer yourself to acknowledge that piece of it for Drew Estate specifically. So it was, it definitely has been the most, a genuine response that I've heard to that piece of the argument and everything. So I think that's to be commended by the industry. If that's something that we still are fighting for, in fact, then, you know, that's certainly a positive thing. But as you mentioned before, sacrifice and, you know, life isn't fair. You use the metaphor of the play with the hand that you're dealt. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something that the industry keeps taking hits on. We keep getting duds of hands and we've got to roll with it. But, you know, at some point we've got to make a stand and make a play that, you know, can, where everyone can win, you know, at least some part.
Yeah. I mean, Bear, I can tell you, if people think that, you know, Drew Estate is over in this corner and the Premium Cigar side is in this corner, it's not the case. It's just not the case. I mean, we fought alongside Drew Estate for many, many years until the government came back and said, listen, we are concerned about flavored cigars, and flavored cigars are going to go away. So what you decide is, do you tether to that and kind of get taken down with that? Or do you somewhat cut ties and figure out, can the rest of us survive? And if you look at the industry, total industry, you don't want the industry to go down for the flavor component. And so those are the tough decisions. I mean, don't think there's not a lot of love between all of us when we're together. There is. But at some point, feelings are going to get hurt and people are going to take sides. And it's a shitty situation. At the end of the day, it's a bad situation. But it's not one that we brought upon ourselves. It was something that was brought to us. And now people have to pick a side in some weird way. Mm. But again, man, I hope they fight like hell. At the end of the day, I don't know that I can be a part of the fight, but man, I hope they fight like hell and I hope they win. And I want to see them continue to be successful as they are today. So I just don't know that with limited resources, right? We're a tiny little industry, right? With limited resources, how much can we put to fighting flavors compared to fighting for the balance of the premium cigar industry?
Alan, you're totally fair.
You're saying this as someone now who owns Lars Teetons. Mm-hmm. This is coming from you. That's very interesting. That's interesting, yeah, to hear you saying that, because it's not like you're not vested in that piece either.
But Coop, I mean, we're all brothers, man. I mean, don't think we're not. We are. And so when I look at the other guys that are not in the flavor position,
right,
and I'm like, those guys should get dragged down because I have a flavor component, or Oliva has a flavor component, or Rocky, or
I get it, yeah.
No, man, I mean, that's not the way it is. You know, this industry, it's not Alec Bradley that's fed my family. This industry has fed my family.
Yeah.
So I have to be protective of the industry in total. And that's the position I take. Let me tell you something. I'll tell you a story. We were at a Big Smoke many years ago. After CRA, whatever, had its out, and Jonathan, Drew, and, you know, Swisher was kind of on one side, and CRA was on the other side. And at the Big Smoke, John came up to me, and he reamed me. Like, how could you do this to me? How could you pick a side different from where I am? And we literally sat down over a bottle of Angel's Envy with 6,000 people in a room and polished off about, you know, half a bottle of Angel's Envy together. And I said, here's where I'm coming from. You need to hear it from me personally. Like, this is where I am. I have to look at the entire industry. We'd love to protect flavors. We'd love for you to continue to do what you do. You know, you're an amazing person and you've built a great company. But if I look at everybody in the room, I have to concern myself with everybody in the room. And those are the decisions I'm trying to make. You know what? We were all okay after that.
Good.
He did take it personally. I don't blame him for it. You know, if I felt like my friend went against me, I would take it personally as well.
Right.
But that's what good whiskey will do. Bring people together. Like cigars.
Yeah.
Cigars.
Very good. Alan, one thing you were, and I'm not pointing at a specific company here, and I know you weren't either, but you have been very vocal on in terms of the paying your share for the fight right now. And that's something I know you brought up a lot in terms of, you know, this is costing money and you want to make sure everyone is paying their fair share.
Yeah, I mean, what is there a question, or you want me to just talk about that?
Yeah, just your comment on that. Maybe, am I reading that wrong? Yeah, I apologize. Well, am I reading that wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. In a recent interview that you gave, Alan, you, and if I may, you were quoted as saying, if you love it enough to do it, and you're talking about the industry and cigars, obviously, to be fully vested in it, you should take some money out of your pocket today so that you can put some money into your pocket tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That was a quote from you. So how have you asked others who aren't invested as Alec Bradley is, and Alan Rubin is specifically, how have you asked others to do that?
So it's an interesting question, Bear, because let's start with the basis of what you just asked. Should I have to ask? Should I have to ask people to invest in their own futures just because they don't see it? If this industry goes away, or this industry gets hurt, or there are regulations put in place that everyone after 2016 or 2008 goes away, or half your inventory portfolio goes away, you're going to be hurting. So why not find a way? We already have a structure in place. We already have federal litigators. We have lawyers that we have, you know, that we retain, that fight the fight every single day for us. Why not just be a part of that? Like, why not protect your future? And I shouldn't even have to ask. You have all these guys that are doing okay. They spend 92 hours a day on Facebook. They're all over the place. And they want to talk about how great they are in the industry. Well, what they're doing is they're just being great for their own company. But what are they contributing to the industry? What are they doing to make the industry in itself stronger? That shouldn't come down to a dozen companies.
Yep.
That should be everybody. Everyone should turn around and say, you know what? I have an extra $3,000. Let me put that in, or let me commit to $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month. But do that by 100 brands. And all of a sudden, we can actually fight harder. And they won't even miss that money. And yet, we can then fight harder to protect. By the way, what do you think is going to happen after COVID-19 when all these states have shortfalls in their budgets? Who are they going after? They're going to go after the easy target. They're going to go after the cigar business. So they're going to raise taxes, right? They're going to do some things that are going to be very tough to fight. And you have to fight that. And how do you fight that? You need money. And when they turn around and say, like, I don't understand what happened. Yeah, well, go buy another watch. Instead of taking that money and putting it towards a fight for your own future. I mean, I shouldn't have to ask that. Now, these are smart people. These are business people. These are people that started a brand. These are people that have a business that they're feeding their families with. Man, figure it out. That's not me, Bear. That's not me to ask. That's for people to look inside, like get a little bit, you know, go a little bit deep within yourself and like say, man, what am I doing? How could I not support this industry that's feeding my family right now? If they think they're selling, you know, to a couple of hundred stores and they're feeding their family, they're making a good living. Yeah. What happens when all of a sudden the taxes are doubled and you're no longer the little prince? What happens there, man? I mean, this is not me, Bear. You know, this is not my fight. This is our fight. And people need to take it more seriously.
I 100% agree with you.
I don't mean to preach,
but you're fine. Yeah.
You hit a spot because it doesn't make sense. I mean, man, I can tell you there's a dozen and a half companies that pay for everything. I mean, you know what? I'm a nice sized company. That's all it is. There's plenty of companies bigger than me, and there's some companies that are smaller than me. But man, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been contributing a long time. Not only my personal time, but all the money that I need to put in that I can afford to put in. Man, someone needs to step up. There's 100 brands under, you know, that are newer. They need to put some money towards the fight because it's their fight. It's not mine. It's ours.
That's absolutely like you said, honest and very eloquent request of people, and you know it, you propose really interesting $1,000 a month over 100 brands. That's 1.2 million. We're 5.6 into the fight. That boosts us up to 6.8 in 12 months time.
Yeah.
Those are the numbers.
That's right.
That, imagine what we could do with that. That's man.
We like, could
very kick, modest proposal.
We
very
could modest. Kick, we could kick ass as an industry.
We could. They're right.
I can tell you because I've walked the hill. You know, you go to DC. And you walk the halls and you speak to congressmen, you speak to senators, you know, you speak to to Congress people. It just, you have these conversations. They're like, yeah, we know you. What do you mean you know us? You have the oil industry that was here 10 minutes before. You know us? Yeah, you guys are making a lot of noise. Can you imagine if we had the financial wherewithal to really make noise? Like to tell people, you know what? We can help do what we need to do the way DC works.
Yep.
That's and like right. really make a voice. I'm telling you, man, there's so much there. But wow. There's so much apathy, and it sucks, man. It just sucks. It's terrible. And it's sad because, again, if you think your company is the only one that's feeding your family, you're wrong. This industry exists for your company to be there. And if the industry goes away, even in a state, because one state bleeds to the next and bleeds to the next, and it's just a bad cycle. So you want to stop it now? Man, $1,000 a month on 100 different companies, it's a game changer compared, because we already have companies that are contributing a hell of a lot more. Just be a part of the fight.
Totally fair.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Barry, I thought you said we're going to have some fun, and I thought that was your...
That was fun for me.
I have
to believe Coop a little more.
That was fun for that me. Was no, fun. Because this is stuff that we've longed to hear.
Yeah, Alan. This was good. You always give an honest and transparent intake, like you said. So that was good. I have a fun question, Bear. I didn't know. And it's the last question, but Bear, do you have anything else on that before I kind of go to that?
Okay. I have one more question.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think you did.
Bear, do not team me up again, Bear.
No. In the same interview, actually, you're quoted again as saying it was part of the same conversation. He said, "All of us who love cigars can do more." In no short order, what you kind of just laid out for us, and don't stand on the sideline. Let somebody else fight the fight, because there are more people involved, the stronger your fight will be. Very eloquently put, as you just kind of illustrated for us. As someone who's clearly evident throughout our conversation today, looked to the future, what does Alan Rubin see as the industry landscape? How does it differ, or how does it stay the same 10 years from now? Not what you hope, but as a pragmatic approach, you've been nothing but pragmatic this whole time, and you seem to operate, you obviously operate your business in that fashion. How do you see the landscape of this industry staying the same and being different 10 years from now?
Yeah. So, you said staying the same and then being different. I'd like to reverse those, right? I think if we talk about being different first, I think what happens is the fight that we have today will continue and it will progressively get worse. I think what happens is once somebody starts a regulation, the regulation hits you at X percent, then all of a sudden they want to increase the regulation. They want to, you know, they're going to find ways, government's going to find ways to diminish your business. Okay. And as you know, tobacco is a dirty word, right? So I think we have a target on our back, and we'll always have a target on our back. And it's funny because I actually almost, and I've said this before, it's a bit of bullying, right? Is that big guy can pick on the little guy. The little guy's got a target on his back because he can't somewhat defend himself, because we're a small industry, right? We don't have the liquor industry dollars. We don't have the oil industry dollars. We don't have those dollars. So we'll always have a target on our back. So that's where I think it will change for the worse. Where I think it will change for the better is that the industry will have to evolve to be tighter. I think the industry will have to have a singular organization, in my opinion. I think you're going to have a singular voice. And I think everyone's going to have to be mandated to contribute to that voice. And so that way we can have one message, one fight, and stay here. That's one part. The other part of this is that I've always said cigar smokers are rebels. We buck the norm. Right? Because most people the majority don't use tobacco. And then as you bring it down even smaller, all of a sudden you have this tiny, small premium cigar industry. But man, we're vocal, we're verbal, we're strong, we're tight. We are a group, we are a family. And I think that's the best thing we have going for us is that cigar smokers are not going to give up. We're going to fight to the end. And maybe the manufacturers are not in it now. I just said, I think more manufacturers need to participate in the fight, but cigar smokers themselves, we're an irreverent bunch.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing we have going for us is that cigar smokers do it not because we have to, it's because we want to. We're not addicted to the cigar, but we love the lifestyle. And I think people don't want to give that up. And I think the strength that we have as an industry 10 years from now is that cigar smokers are true. They're true to the premium cigar lifestyle. And they're not going to want that to go away. And someone is going to reach someone who's going to reach somebody up in DC and say, you're not taking this away from me. I don't care what you do. You better figure it out because I just donated $6 million to your campaign. And I'm a cigar smoker and you better figure this out. And I think that's ultimately how it works. So I think that the weakness that we have is that we have a target on the back. And I think the strength is that we have is that cigar smokers, we're tight. You can go to any city and you can know not one single person. And if you're a cigar smoker and you go to your local tobacconist, within a week, you have phone numbers, you have friends, I'll meet you there next Tuesday. We're tight as a group. And I think that's our strength moving forward. So, and I think 10 years, that will be our success. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, it did. Very good. All right, Alan, I got one more fun question for you.
Thank God.
Okay. and it may be a simple no and it will kill it. All right. Okay. But I says, are you a fan of the show Dynasty?
The new show Dynasty?
Well, I thought I saw something that you were watching Dynasty. The show, I don't know if it was the new one or the old one. I'll have a comment on that after. But okay. I wasn't sure. Long story
short. You knew the fun question was going to come sooner or later, right?
Right. So,
thank God it did.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I met my wife in high school, right? And then I went to college. We weren't dating for a while. And then I started watching the old Dynasty basically at a student lounge for women to meet women, right? Right? So eventually when I started like dating my wife and married her, she like found out I'm a fan of this show, right? She said, how did you become a fan? I had to kind of come clean on it, right? So I watched the old one. Like, so I was just wondering about that because like, people don't know that about me. It's quite true.
Well, I think what's good is that Wednesday nights can be now Coop's dating tips.
Right. oh, I met a lot of women that student, Douglas College at Rutgers.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that I was a fan of Dynasty, but there was a connection to Dynasty, the new version. And that is one of the marketing people that I've worked with that I've gotten to love is a guy named Dave Gillies. An amazingly talented guy. His daughter is one of the main characters.
Fallon. I tried to watch it. It wasn't the same, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so
wow.
That's really the connection that I have to Dynasty is that Fallon's, you know, her father, okay. Dave, has been in and around the cigar industry for a long time, a huge fan of cigars, and just so creatively talented and an amazing soul, man. He's just a good soul. He's a good dude. And you know, we don't work with him anymore, but I miss him as a person because he's just funny. He makes me laugh. And so that was the connection.
Okay. That's awesome. That's an awesome story there. I was just excited. I see things on social media and I make notes of them to come back in the interview. I've learned that from Bear. So I actually made a note. I thought I saw that once. Oh, that's cool. That's a cool.
Actually, it's funny because we do if you think about the ads that we do with you,
right?
That those ads started in doing that with Abe on his show, and we actually had those recorded. So you do it, but we had it recorded, and the character's name was Dan Blunt, and that was Dave Gillies who did the character.
Wow, really? Nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's a really good.
So phenomenal.
Dan Blunt here.
Yeah, right. That's it.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, that was Dave Gillies. So
I got to tell Abe that. I don't know if Abe knew that even.
Yeah.
Wow.
I, I love the ads, Alec, Alan, about the Alec Bradley one, especially the one where about 500 cigars are set afire in this country every minute. That's a staggering statistic. Wait, that's a good thing. Every time Coop reads it, I just like.
Oh wow!
I love it. Oh man!
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, it's perfect.
That's Dave, man. We just tasked him with it. We're like, do something fun that people will remember. He came up with this character, and every time I hear that, by the way, I laugh.
Wow! Wow, that is really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And of course, the way Coop really emphasizes the. And you'll taste that baby and say,
I can't nail like Dan, but I love the Dan. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Right. Alan, we want to thank you very, very much for being a part of this episode. It was a very special episode for us. We do appreciate you gave us a lot of time here. Very generous. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the support you've given us as well.
Coop, Bear, I have to tell you, couldn't be more proud of you guys, man. I mean, 75 episodes on the prime time and 3 years into it. And you guys are so on top of everything. I mean, the amount of research you do, you don't go into it blind, truly, truly professional. And I'm just honored to be a part of it. So thank you for having me. I look forward to always seeing you guys and speaking with you guys. Truly, it's every time. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you.
Yeah, the honor is ours. Thank you,
Alan. And thanks to your sons and your great team, John and those guys. They're terrific. So thanks very much.
Always a pleasure.
All right. All right, Alan. You have a great night, and I'll see you down the road this year because we got to get you.
I hope so.
So it will be in person one way or another.
I hope so.
I'm itching to get back to South Florida. So
listen, if you have any, if you guys have any questions, if I can help you out in any way, it doesn't have to be on air, right? I mean. I'm always available to both of you guys at any time. And if I can help you in any way, I'm here.
Thank you so much. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
We do appreciate that. All right. That is the great Alan Rubin of Alec Bradley Cigars. And what we'll do, Bear, is we'll do, we have one more segment, folks, we're going to do, because we're going to talk a little about our 3 years. So what we'll do is we'll just do a quick sponsor read. On that, and of course I don't have it up. I apologize. I am sorry.
I have one.
Why don't you go ahead, because I didn't have my stuff up. I had to shut a couple windows.
Celebrating 3 years of Cigar Coop Primetime Special Edition, this show is sponsored, of course, by Illusione Cigar. Deep in flavor, deep in your mind. We are not industry standard Illusione Cigars.
Okay, and I'm ready to do the next one. Aventura Cigars. Aventura the Explorer is the first creation by Marcel Noble and Henderson Ventura. Immediately after lighting up the Explorer, the Mexican wrapper will delight the aficionado with its dark chocolate flavor. After a while and pleasure, the Dominican filler will flatter the aficionado's palate with wonderful spicy and leathery aromas and will unite it with the wooden sweetness from Ecuador. Try Aventura the Explorer and explore this wonderful experience. And I guess you want to do Michael's?
With just over a decade of ownership, Michael's Tobacco has become the premier tobacconist for the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area and cigar patrons the world over. With two convenient locations in Euless, just a quick jaunt from the DFW airport, and Keller, Texas, Michael's Tobacco stands as a beacon for the Texas cigar retailer. As Michael's is the very first cigar lounge in the state of Texas to add a full bar to its list of ever-growing accommodations. Proprietor Mike Peacock is a former PCA board member and has now made Michael's a family affair by having his son, Bob, join the ownership force. Under general manager and master storyteller Tracy Spence's leadership at Michael's, his self-proclaimed greatest accomplishment has been assembling, quote, the greatest team in the cigar retail business, unquote, as well as build some of the finest relationships with the industry's most respected individuals, like our esteemed guest this evening. Inventory director Jason Fields handles and maintains two of the area's proudest humidors, containing premium cigars for everyone from the everyday smoker to the most ardent collector of rare puros. Under Mike, Bob, Tracy, and Jason's example, they have enlisted a staff of Kevin, Austin, myself, Joe, Salas, Brandon, and now Kyle that collectively boast over 100 years combined industry experience. Together, they have brought together a true and blessed mainstay for their respective communities. Whether you're celebrating an anniversary like we are tonight, a birthday, hole in one, or just a desire to relax, Michael's Tobacco will have the perfect cigar waiting for you with an exquisite beverage pairing and lively conversation. Visit michaelstobacco.com for more details in the calendar of upcoming events. Michael's Tobacco, not just a cigar shop, but the perfect blend of Texas hospitality and the days of yore.
And, you know, Barry, I think, you know, one thing I've seen you do on your show really well, again, keep supporting your local brick and mortars there. Guys like Michael's, Tailored Smokes, Smoke Inn, The Cigar Shop, Tinderbox. I know I'm leaving out a ton of retailers, but these guys really, really need your help right now. And I always joke around, I say sometimes retailers, they drive me crazier than anyone, but you know, they do need our help right now. We want to have places. We want to have places to buy cigars and enjoy cigars. So please, 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 you know, support these guys. It's very, very important right now.
When things open back up, be sure to let them know just how truly grateful you really are.
Yeah. I won't let them drive me crazy actually for a while. So
it wasn't a pointed comment, Coop. It was a general assessment.
No, I know it is. You know, so Bear, you know, we always try to do a bigger show for the milestones, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think on both shows we've had some big ones. How, I mean, Alan Rubin just gave us 2.5 hours of time, and he's done a lot of these shows. And all I'm gonna say is, you heard stuff tonight that you didn't hear in any other show. Is what I'm just gonna say. There were a lot of tough questions we asked him. You know, there was a couple of mic drop moments in that one towards the end. Yeah. But it was, I mean, I couldn't ask. Alan was, he's just been a great supporter of ours, and getting to know him over the past couple of years, like I have, I couldn't have been more pleased with having Alan as for our 3-year anniversary show.
You know, Coop, there have been milestone moments, both celebrated and non-celebrated moments that we've had on the show in the last 3 years that, you know, have been committed to memory. And this one certainly will as well.
Holy cow. Yeah. And he was very candid on a lot of things. You know, we hit him right up with Lars Teton as the first question too. And it was just like, you know, he answered that I didn't expect to get the answer I was getting from him on that. I didn't know where that one was heading.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't want to bring this up in the interview just because it was an observation. I wanted to sit back, ask some questions, have you ask some questions, and really just listen to Alan. Yeah, and have our audience do the same. But one of the assessments that I've heard about Alan over the years, and his sons have pointed this out to me too, that no matter where they go and no matter who you talk to, if they know Alan Rubin or if they've met Alan Rubin, the word that continually comes up over and over again is the word genuine.
Yep.
And this being my first time to be able to actually sit and talk with him in an interview, there's just no way I can't agree with that. He was genuine doesn't begin to describe his transparency, his candid nature. And I know our good friend and your partner on Cigar Coup Primetime, Aaron Loomis, hates this word. But man, the passion was just leaking all over the place.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Yeah. And you know, you interviewed Alec only 2 days beforehand, right? So we had father and son, but it was like, and they were two great interviews and two great perspectives. But you see that also carry over to his sons as well. It's very clear.
They're absolutely chips off the block.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a good week to have for Alec Bradley, for both of us this week. But yeah, I guess if you guys, or tuning in late and you didn't hear this interview, you need to rewind this one.
Yes, 100%.
Because, you know, this is going to go down in our – I mean, we had three big ones. We had, you know, Ernesto was the first one for year one. Nick Malolo was year two, and Alan Rubin was year three. So we do try to bring a very good guest, and the fact that Alan was more than willing to do this interview, he's been doing a ton of interviews, right? And I know we had to kind of look at some ways and just kind of figure a way to make the interview unique. And I didn't know if it was going to work or not, right? You know, I thought maybe, but as this went on, it was like there was so much that we were talking about with this. Even when we were just going through the brands at the beginning too, getting some of those perspectives there.
Yeah, like you mentioned with the Lars Teton question, and even with, you know, Project 40, and
yeah,
you know, he was very honest about the performance, and he was, I mean, I think it was clear that he was pleased with everything. But I take two answers away from the top of the show, where I asked him, you know, he mentioned the word making. It's clear that he really cares about the comfort level of the consumer. You know, he mentioned that point several times.
Yep.
And then I turned it wasn't a dirty trick, mind you, but I turned that word on him. You know, because he talked about the Alec Bradley centric mentality, and he did away, you know, he went away from that in two very extreme ways with Project 40 and the Lars Teton release of the last year's trade show.
Very much.
Yeah. And I asked him, you know, how comfortable he was with that. And I thought his answer was very interesting.
Yeah,
he wasn't at first, but it proved to be successful, which is really terrific.
When we had him on with Aaron back in August, you know, one question that came up was, you know, I had picked, I think it was Aga Norsleaf as my company of the show. And he was kind of wondering why I didn't pick Alec Bradley, right? And my answer was on Alec Bradley is this was such new territory that they were going into. I think they had to prove themselves a lot there. And he was very transparent about learning from some of these, especially on the Lars Teton's end, obviously. That, you know, but at the same time, I think he did learn something, and there's some things, you know, looks like there's going to be some changes with that, which is interesting. They're still committed to it very much, which is great news. Hopefully the SS needs to stay the same.
Yes.
The Sweet and Spicy needs to stay the same. And the Serie D. So I got to put that one in there too. I have the SS review coming up pretty soon. People have been asking me about that one, but yeah, no, like I said, I couldn't have asked, you know, it was like I said, we do try to always bring the best show possible. This one was one that's going to go down in that memory of the big interviews for sure.
Oh, for me, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, but it's been a very good 3 years, Bear. You know, I always like to tell the story for how, you know, a lot of people ask us how we got together. It was kind of, you know, you reached out to me. I reached out to you. You were doing those videos at Michael's, which you still do that, which you'll still be doing them, right? And you had done something on Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I was doing more concept videos at the time. You know, it was an educational piece, but it was also meant to be entertaining and engaging with, you know, our consumer base and our patrons and, you know, the social media community, so to speak. And I was doing all these words. It's still not my favorite one. My favorite one is talking about Maduro cigars, and started with the lights turned off, and I had a single flame that lit up, and I was like, hey, don't be afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are afraid of Maduro cigars, but that's probably my favorite one. But no, what happened was for those who don't know the story, it was right around the time where the Cigar Baseball Hall of Fame had just announced the newest inductees. And so the question I posed and answered in my video was who would be my first ballot Hall of Famers in the Bear Cigar Hall of Fame. And I named a few people, and this video caught your attention, and we had known each other. We kind of mentioned this earlier. You know, we had known each other, through social media.
Right. We didn't know each other, but we knew each other through social media.
Yeah. Very, very, very soft touch acquaintances is probably the best description of it.
Right.
And you said, great. You passed a compliment along to me. You said, great. Great show. I love it. I loved the video. I thought it was great. And I was like, and I kind of half jokingly posed to you like, oh, did you like it enough to put on one of your many shows that you're doing? Cause at the time you were doing your previous show, and you were also on a radio program, and you know, you've always been really diverse with the Cigar Coupe brand and everything. So, and to my surprise and delight, you said, absolutely. And to this day, I still think it's hilarious how it kind of transpired, because I followed up with you a number of times until we finally got the show on. But I until the day before the show, or until that first phone conversation we had, which was a couple of days before the show,
right?
I thought I was just doing a segment.
Yeah, that was well. That's what. So what happened was, yes, we talked, and then I had a follow up, but I was just leaving. I was in the process. I'd left Stogie Geeks, and I had not launched the Thursday primetime show yet. Aaron and I were still in the developmental phase of that, and there were a lot of things that had to be put in place to really make sure that was launched correctly, making sure I had the you know, there was just equipment considerations. I was traveling in Honduras and Nicaragua in February. And then, you know, we wanted to make sure we had a good, so we started that in April. And then the idea was eventually I wanted to do the second show, which was going to be more news magazine, special features, maybe additional interviews. But I figured it was going to be, this was 2017. I figured this was a 2018 thing. But there was something about the conversations, messaging with Bear and I had on this. And then when we had that prior conversation before we did it, let me just do a special edition show. You were actually a guest on that first show more than a, I mean,
yeah,
you kind of co-hosted it, but there wasn't a planned special edition. Wasn't a thing that we were going to be doing on a semi-regular basis. And the reaction we got, the chemistry I thought I had with you, I'm like, hey, what do you think about doing this like on an ongoing basis? And that's how special edition was formed. It evolved a little differently. I know we've struggled sometimes with some overlap. What it's given us, I think, is on both shows is we have now different perspectives to interview people with, which is good. I mean, you and Aaron bring very distinct personalities. So if we bring guests back on like Alan, you know, it's sometimes better to have that other voice that we don't have, right? And that's what I think worked well with that. And, you know, like I said, this show has been as successful as the Thursday show. We've had great, you know, it's been a great run with this. And we've gone 3 years and 75 episodes, about two shows a month, which is what we were looking to do. I mean, there were a couple points where I was sick and then, you know, you had some family stuff going on, you know, obviously having another kid. So we were off a little, but I think for the most part, we've really kept to that, which mm-hmm. has been incredible. So, I working with you, Aaron, and now Dave Burke, I couldn't be working with, you know, there's other great people I know out there, but we have a very solid team here. I think, you know, we've just done our thing basically.
Yeah, Cooper. I mean, one of the things that we often say about Aaron is that, you know, Aaron is over at Developing Palettes has enlisted probably the premier team in the cigar media game. You know, with you know Surgeon and right. Geis and June and himself. But I mean, second to that, Coop, I think you know. If I may speak so boldly about myself,
we're pretty damn good.
I was gonna say
we're pretty damn good.
You've put together quite the team. I'm proud to be a part of it.
And we've kept this team together for 3 years. It's very hard to do. You know, and bringing Dave on. I mean, Dave's more on the music mm-hmm. end of things. He's all in Australia. He's like 10,000 miles away from me. And I, you know, for folks that Rick Nielsen interview that we did, I just want to give Dave his props too. Dave really put that interview together. And it was no joke when I was very nervous before that interview. Dave actually was one of the guys that talked me off the ledge, as you did and my wife did. Because I was messaging all you guys, I think Aaron too. I was like, I'm falling apart here. Because it was a big moment. So
it's a great, great interview. I just finished it today, Coop. You and Dave put together just an amazing show, and what an opportunity. I mean, you're such a music fan. And you and Dave, you really share that passion, and it was just so clear throughout all of it. But
yeah,
as much as excited as you were, kind of kids in a candy store with it, it still was incredibly professional. And there wasn't one part of it that wasn't entertaining. Rick was on top of his game.
Absolutely. He gave us a lot of time. We did not expect to have the amount of time we had with him. I got to know Aaron very well, his son. I consider his son now a really good friend. We message each other a lot. We talk cigars a lot. I think we'll be doing some more shows with Aaron, certainly, if he wants to. I mean, like I said, we've had this really, really solid team. I know it's not easy working with me sometimes. And I just couldn't ask for three better guys. I know there's other great guys out there who would love to bring in. But we, you know, we have to be manageable too. So, so it's really, especially we're competing with a lot of podcasts right now. So, you know, and it's good. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. It's making us, it's making everyone do a better job. So that's what's good.
Yeah. It's elevating us on our game too. You know, you and I've talked about this, you know, off air, and my contention was that, you know, anything that brings attention, positive attention to the cigar industry is good for the industry. And we've kind of, you know, we, and along with a lot of the other staple programs that have been out there for a number of years too, have kind of really carried the banner this time. And, you know, COVID-19 presented a great opportunity and allowed a lot of talented individuals to really, you know, engage with the consumer base in a way that they didn't have the avenue or the time, frankly, to before. And when things do go back to, you know, normal, when things open up and people start going back on the road and, you know, guests are ours, are, you know, our guests are, you know, in hotel rooms giving interviews rather than from their home or from their office and everything, you know, it'll just continue to keep the consumer engaged with the people they've become more familiar with, you know, what we will continue to bring the next 3 years on special edition will be terrific.
I agree. I totally agree. But you know, and it's always amazing when we have these moments, right? Because it is fun. Aaron and I really didn't get a chance to do a reflection on our 3 year because we had Pete on that night, the whole show. And it's kind of tough talking about our stuff, you know, with Pete. We ended up, that format's a little different, but you know, I looked again the past year of who we talked to, what we talked about, and I'm blown away. I got a couple of things I'll comment on. First, we broke the gender barrier on the primetime show officially. Mm-hmm. We have had Courtney's from Courtney and Anthony on a couple of times, but we never had a whole show with a female. Mm-hmm. We managed to break the gender barrier on both shows, but we did it first on special edition with Emma.
Victorson. Great interview.
And that was a lot of fun that night. While her son was having a meltdown, right?
totally empathize with that.
Totally, and poor Jose that night. But no, and you know, but she did a great job while her son was having a meltdown on the air right before we went on the air. So that was a moment. You know, that was a great interview. I just we did that one, I think, right around Thanksgiving, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one. I had another one of the 724 Gordo versus Lancero showdown.
Yes.
That was, I think, it turned into a lot of fun. Our audience really got into it. We had a lot of fun with that show. I think we created a little and we're going to be doing more of those types of showdown type shows. We've bounced around some other ideas. Some of the concept shows, I think, bear because of COVID. We decided that, you know, most of our shows were planned out, but some of these weren't. We went a little more guest focused to strike them while these people were available. And we're going to talk about one at the end of the show, who's coming up next week. Yeah. So I think, you know, again, falls into that category.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited about that. I can't wait to announce that to our audience. And, you know, one of the show concepts.
That's a teaser, I guess, right?
Well, not really, because we're going to tell people here in a moment. They just have to hang around.
Yep.
You know, one of the concepts that we unleashed this past year, which has been a lot of fun, and we've only done a couple of them, but I can't wait to see how the series unfolds, is the Mount Rushmore series.
Yeah.
You know, we did it with Drew Estate, and we just did it with Rocky Patel a few weeks ago, and you know, I really like the direct. You know, I think it started as one kind of concept, and we kind of. If it started to morph it, and it'll continue to develop and kind of take on a life of its own, I feel like. And it was really fun for me. I've really enjoyed it. I think our audience really appreciates it. They get into it, agreeing, disagreeing, you know, banter back and forth, ball busting. It's all in good fun. And it's, you know, it, you know, it allows us to commune over the thing that really brings us all together, which is cigars. It's not just the person that we're interviewing in some cases where, you know, of course that has its own merit, and it's a lot of, those are a lot of fun as well. Like tonight, earlier tonight was, but when we're just talking about cigars, you know, it's and we're having that conversation, like you and I would have that conversation in a cigar shop, you know, it kind of takes on a life of its own. And I think it's proven that it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I agree with those. We're going to have more of those, you know. To the irony bear, Mount Rushmore, when we first did it on Stogie Geeks in 2013, was done on episode 75.
We just had to break it out before 75. It was that good.
Yeah, but we decided to put a little, I think the idea we came is we had done some different spins on that. We decided to do a little more brand specific on Stogie, on Primetime. Well, Stogie Geeks, we were doing more generalization. So not, you know, we could go in a different direction. We've been picking companies. I have a couple of interesting ones we could talk about, certainly, of doing more. I could probably think of two or three you want to do, as well as two or three I'd want to do. So,
gee, I'm shocked that you would be able to pick mine out, but
I bet you wouldn't figure out one of mine. But no, actually, you came up with the two companies, which were Drew Estate and Rocky Patel, and they challenged me in a lot of different ways. And then you came up with something that you added in with that, which we had never done before, is you kind of came up with the mapping it to the presidents, which is now, I think, going to be something we do on the show all the time. So when we did the Rocky show, we were mapping, like when we did the Drew Estate show, I didn't map it to the presidents. You were mapping it to the presidents. I'm like, this is a great idea. So now I think we'll always be mapping it to the presidents. It kind of gives a little different spin on that as well.
The history nerd in me, man. You gotta understand where that's coming from.
Exactly. Exactly. That's good. We've had, you know, we've always kind of crossed this area into sports, right? And we've done the two shows that we've always done is we do the baseball show twice. We'll probably do three this year, right? But we've done the baseball shows and we do the big game show with John Carney. I just want to make a couple of comments. I don't like talking about numbers on the show, but I'll just say the shelter in place episode we did with the baseball show is top 10 downloads of all time. And the big game show is top 10 overall all time. So that the big game show we did with Carney this past January is the biggest special edition show we've done to date.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know where it is. It's higher than 10. I don't remember where it fell, because it's a little tricky to pull the numbers and add them all up, but that big game show did really well. So I think those have been, you know, those have been kind of just offshoots of what special edition is about. We do sometimes change it up, and we do things because these are things we've loved to do. Oh, I can't forget about auto racing.
Yeah, we do the indie show. But, yeah, with Phil.
With Phil, Phil actually wants to do another show, and I know he's chomping to do it. We've talked about some other content. We talked about, you know, Kentucky Derby. So, and you know, whether it's on this show or other, you know, one of the other brands, I think they're fun areas to cross over. And it kind of gets us out of, and we always try to bring cigar people onto those shows. So kind of get that, you know, so it's still got an industry feel, even though we're not talking rapper behind the filler that night.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It's a way to kind of bring the cigar shop to the podcast level a little bit. Where I will grandstand for just a moment on some of these concept shows though, Coop, is the fact that, you know, we were stating earlier, you know, our guests and our co-hosts and our partners in these shows, we really bring their A game. You know, this isn't just guys just bullshitting about back and forth and everything. There's real hardcore research done on these shows. And, I always commend Phil because, I mean, Phil's a walking encyclopedia of sports in general, but he is a savant when it comes to
racing. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I mean, this is a kid. He's a kid. He's younger. He's younger than I. And his affluency in auto, the auto racing world, everything from NASCAR to Formula One to Indy is, I mean, he's an authority.
Well, he smokes cigars, so I don't want to say he's not a cigar guy, but yeah, he's probably the one guy we haven't brought from the industry on because he's got such knowledge I'm blown away by his knowledge of auto racing. So yeah, I mean, you introduced me to him, and you did a NASCAR thing on him originally, I think it was.
Yeah, I did the Daytona show on LLC Fumar Takes, and then he also did a football preview show with me too. And I've kind of gotten away from those concept shows just a little bit, just because I've wanted to kind of build out the cigar piece a little bit more, and I've had the good fortune and the opportunity to have a lot of terrific guests and everything, and I'll certainly probably reintroduce some of those as time goes on. But I wanted to, very early on in the concept of LLC Fumar Takes, I wanted to bring elements of the cigar shop to that show as well. Yeah. I think particularly on this show, I think it's really come to fruition in the best possible way.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to look right now at the, you've done a good job. I think the two fastest growing cigar podcasts right now, if I had to say, is LLC Fumar Takes and probably How About That Cigar, probably the two I'd say, that have had great growth in the last year.
Oh, easily.
And it takes a lot of work to get these shows up. Jukebox is taking some work. We're now getting to, we're starting to see some big things with Jukebox happen the last 4 or 5 episodes. So they take a while sometimes to start and like you said, it's a lot of work. People don't, we don't want to go on and just, a lot of shows like to be very agile and loose. I don't fault that. It just doesn't work for us, I think, what we're trying to accomplish here. So, a lot of people just get on and they'll just, my big beef, right? I don't want to have a show where if you're drunk, that's judging the success. I don't mind if someone gets drunk on the show, but I don't want the show to be judged how good it is based on how drunk someone is.
No, 100%.
Yeah, so, yeah. And that's I think, an important thing that we've tried to do with that, So, I looked at went back at the last year, Bear. Sometimes I'm critical after a show, right? I haven't had many of those critical moments. I looked at every episode, because we really start off with the indie show with Phil after our 2 year. We had the Al McAuliffe one, which I know we had sound issues with that. But the content was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The content was, we had Al on. We had Al on for almost 2 hours, I think, on that show. And then, it just moved into IPCBR. We did the Desert Roll show with Robert Holt. That was a huge show we did. Gave a lot of stuff away that night. The steamroll, what happened after that?
Yeah, we slowed down in the fall because of the birth of my second child a little bit, but we didn't really miss a step, in my opinion, as far as bringing up some great concept shows, and then also just having some terrific interviews. You mentioned Emma a moment ago. Robert Holt was really great. Justin Andrews a few weeks ago was incredible.
Jared, Lazuka, Bellity, yeah.
The Bellity show was interesting for me. I really enjoyed the turn that it took.
I was worried it was going off the tracks, that one.
But we brought it. It was the first time we've ever brought in on a fly. We've ever brought in a special guest in the middle of the show. It was the first time we've ever done that. And we brought in Jared Trudeau of Christoph. It started with a lot of them mixing it up back and forth, which was really entertaining. But those two guys specifically bring a geographical element to the cigar industry that's different. There's a lot of people that are based out of Florida. You get a lot of that that Florida perspective a little bit, because that's where a lot of these companies are based. And these are two guys that grew up in New England. And when you think of cigar hotbeds, typically, there's some great shops and some great, iconic shops and great, iconic cultural pieces in the northeastern part of the country. That's not typically something that people associate with the cigar industry. So to have the perspective from two guys that herald from that area, and the success that they've both had, was really dynamic and interesting.
Don't rule out that New England area, as I'll tell people.
Right.
Let me tell you something. when we have guests out of the New England area, the New England fans show up and our numbers do great. I'm going to be, and when I put a review out on anything related to something, a New England brand or a brand that maybe is like, for example, a popular brand in a Two Guys Smoke Shop that people get, you know, because people get behind their retailer brands. Oh my goodness. The comments flow out of there. Like, I know there was like a couple of cases that when you give below a 90 to a one of those things, you're going to get, I'm going to hear it from these guys because they're very, and I'm not, I think it's great, but there's a lot of, I'll use the passion word. There's a lot of passion from those guys up there. And, you know, again, we think Florida, we think Texas, New England, man, I'm telling you, that's a hard, and I did Stogie Geeks, you know, up there for 3.5 years. So I know full on, that's a very, very great cigar market is what I'm saying. There's great cigar consumers up there.
Yeah, well, when you think about the people that hail from that area, I mean, you think about Sacco, you think about Kurt Kendall, you think about Garofalo, you think about, you know, Herklotz from New York, you know, think about Jared and Bellady, as we mentioned already. Yeah. And then, of course, Carney, you know, Carney hails from Maine. Pete Johnson is from Maine.
KC
is from Maine. So
Joe D, can't forget Joe D, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but Joe D, I mean, he's been a great, you know, great addition to the industry, what he's done. Yeah. Great fan of the show, great friend. Yeah. So, I mean, you get these guys and it's great. I mean, it's just, I love it when we kind of go that angle because it's always generates some excitement there.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mention another interview. The Nestor interview.
Oh, great. Great spot.
How about the part where Nestor, when I asked him how he got in the cigar industry? Because of the chicks.
Because of the chicks, man.
If that wasn't... I go back, I'm like, that was a cool answer from Nestor.
Yeah.
Nestor and Jason were on that show. That was... I just... Hysterical, right?
Yeah, we got Nestor in trouble that night.
Yeah. Well, Jason was having a heart attack. Nestor's spilling the beans on everything that night.
Yes, exactly. Nestor's telling Jason to give us every cigar under the sun. And Jason's like, okay, I'll take care of it. And Nestor's like, no, make sure they get some. Make sure they get it. He's like insisting on the show on air.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny. And it was just, and I've been wanting to have Nestor on the shows. I interviewed him one more time at Stogie Geeks about like five. He did one episode 100 for us at Stogie Geeks. And I know if I mentioned Stogie Geeks, it was a big part of if this show wouldn't have been here if I didn't do my time on Stogie Geeks. So I always give those guys their props there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we took things in a different direction, but certainly, you know, that road wouldn't have happened without my experience there. So I always, you know, if I'm mentioning him a lot, it's a reason why. So it's been a good year, Bear.
It certainly has. Here's to another one.
Yep. You have any other reflections before we wrap up?
So yeah, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If you could look back on the 3 years collectively, and I think there's no doubt that we've ironed out kinks and that we've gotten, this show's gotten obviously better
right
along the way. You know, we introduced Facebook Live into it earlier this year too, or earlier in year three.
Yeah.
But what do you consider, if you can, the turning point for Primetime Special Edition? Where did it turn the corner, and become what it is in your mind today?
I actually think it was, I think there were two shows. And I know it's an answer, but I think when we covered the Gottlieb Doctrine going way back, right, people were paying attention to us for the concept piece. And then when we did the Nestor Plasencia interview, then the interview piece came. We were doing great interviews, but then that's when we really turned the corner there with that. I look at those two as very key moments in the history of this show. Where I think if we didn't have those, the road might have been different. How about you?
Those are pretty good points.
Yeah.
I think for me, it wasn't even part of the show. It was part of this media collective that in partnership that we have. For me, it was last year's trade show, and it was the we really stepped up our game. We covered more booths. We did more interviews than you've ever done at the trade show. And that kind of spearheaded the late success that we had in 2019, I think. And for me, I think that was kind of that was the turning point for me, because I feel like I've certainly added value to this partnership.
From day one. Yeah, you have.
I feel like I really have. And this isn't me being self-deprecating or anything like that, or being too boastful in that regard. But after that, it really felt like, okay, I've done it now for you. I've really come full circle, and I've really contributed in a major way to where this is really progressing something incredibly successful. And building upon something really well. And I think that for me was kind of the turning point, was just the avid coverage piece, what we were able to do collectively, how that success translated over to both shows based on the relationships and everything that we built. And I think it culminated in a lot of these great concepts that we had in the past year. I think it culminated in a lot of the great interviews that we've had. I was the one who was able to, organize and get Nestor on.
That was all you.
And I've been able to bring a couple of guests in for this show. The Nestor one that you mentioned, that was my first big get, if you can call it that.
You got another one, but yeah, that's coming up. Yeah, that's several big gets, but that was the first. And I didn't think it was going to happen. We had to put that show together very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We go back. That's why that was such a turning point, I think, for us personally, because we had to, the planning piece had to be accelerated to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we had to be spot on. And we were doing that before Facebook, Zoom, before we had Zoom. So, yeah, that's why it was such a turning point. And I felt Aaron and I had gone through a challenge where we had to get a guest after the show started once, right? And we actually did that. That's mm-hmm. when Brian Musard couldn't get a connection going, and Nate McIntyre stepped in, and we had to do a show without prep. Then when it happened here, I was like, now I know I'm working with guys who are professionals. Man, we pull it off. So any fears I had where maybe our prep, there were circumstances affecting things, that was we had a little more time to prep for Nestor than obviously the others, but we didn't have our normal period where we start like I'll lay in bed sometimes and start thinking about this stuff. So, I didn't really have that opportunity. And it was just, what a fantastic opportunity. Bear, the other thing, and I don't mean to digress, we can go back to this point, but we'd really had planned this year, assuming there was a trade show, there was going to be more interviews. And in 2021, I could just tell you, there's going to be more interviews the way we do them, where I think Bear's going to be doing a lot more of those. Bear, you bring that human perspective, and I think it's perfect for the show. We're not going to go to 100 booths and do 100 interviews, right? But I think what I've seen is the job you've done at the trade show, you're a very good interviewer. We should definitely have more opportunities. And so we're looking at a third person for next year so we can focus you on a piece you're very strong on. So I think you and I have talked about that.
Yeah.
Options we have with that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting because it's something that I enjoy. I enjoy sitting down and
yeah. And we partnered them. Hey, we share those interviews between El Oso and Primetime.
Yeah.
So.
No, and we
and it works out well for us. Yeah.
We did it with last year's Barn Smoker. When I sat down with Pedro at the Florida Barn Smoker, and that was another on location interview. Yeah. Everything that was in the style of our interviews from the trade show.
I uploaded that cigar from a farm field on a 5G.
Yeah.
I was worried about the computer overheating.
Yes.
Because it was hot.
Dedication, man. Dedication.
I blew my limit, but it was worth it that day. Just because it was cool enough where I could get this show uploaded on the 5G, and I did that. Wasn't too bad on my phone bill, but it was okay. Yes, but no, I agree with that. Those turning points were really key ones as well. You know, so it just, you know, and I want to make it, you know, like I said, it's just been a great, I can't wait for year four with the challenges we have, certainly. You know, I'm a little concerned we aren't going to have our PCA coverage because I do believe the show's getting canceled. And if it's not, it's going to be different. So, but I think we're strong enough, we'll survive it. I feel bad for the guys who are so dependent on their coverage, personality driven at the trade show. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for these guys right now. Like the half wheels and the coupes will be okay, but the people who just totally build their whole year around those interviews. I mean, look at what Dojo did last year, taking it live.
Yeah.
Like no one, and that was a great, and he did a TPE again. He took the coverage to a different level. You know, and I hate the fact that they're not going to have that. We could probably survive on it better, because we have, you know. But I do feel bad for him on that. Like doing 100 live interviews, that's amazing.
It is. It is, and it's, yeah, and it's certainly, you know, yeah. This 2020 has certainly thrown us all for a loop, and it's going to continue to throw us for a loop as we progress through the rest of this year. But, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I think with the foundation that we've built, you know, on these 3 years. And the 3 years plus with primetime, you know, has really culminated in a terrifically successful product. So it's given the audience what they want.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I've seen, you know, also from our takes has grown. Look at what Development Palettes has done with Pour and Tell the last few weeks. I mean, they're grown. So I mean, it's everyone's finding some great growth points right now. And you know, you got to make lemonade out of lemons, you know. There's no other way to put it. But you got to be the lime, as Fred Ruiz says.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. Anything else?
No, Coop. Thank you, man. Happy anniversary. Thank you. I'm honored to be a part of this, man.
A Diet Coke. Yeah.
Seltzer water to you, sir. Yeah. Cheers.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up, but I want to make when I say I'm going to make an announcement, right, we don't just like make an announcement and say we're going to tease you and then tell you the new announcement is I'm switching from Diet Coke to Diet Pepsi. You know, and like, that's what so we have a show next week, and the man who made this show happen is sitting in Euless, Texas, and I want you to announce who our guest is next week because you made this happen, my friend.
Well, a lot of people made this happen, but I kind of got the ball rolling on it. But I'm pleased for our audience is going to be able to experience this Cigar Coupe Primetime Special Edition style, if you will, next week for a special edition 76, kicking off year four with a bang. We're going to be sitting down with another Cigar Hall of Famer, Mr. Lito Gomez of La Flor Dominicana.
That is a first. That is a first time we're announcing this here. Yet that is confirmed. I've been promising everyone this epic month of May. We're going to bring the A game of shows, and there is more to come as everything gets finalized. Once things are finalized, we'll announce it. But we've kicked this thing off. Really, Jonathan, who's kind of, because that show got uploaded May 1st, and Bear, so great job on that. We're really looking for, I'll probably be a wreck next week, just so you know.
It's gonna go fine. We're gonna do great. We always do.
We're just gonna bring the A game, man. We gotta get Oliver back on the show. I just saw Joe D make a comment. We're way overdue to have Oliver on the show. I love that guy. Yeah. So that's another one we got to certainly tee up. And then what I'll announce is for Thursdays, this one's already been announced. Jeff Borshowitz of Corona Cigar Company of FSG Farm. We normally do the pregame show. We would have been doing a pregame show. We decided to have Jeff on anyway. Because Jeff is an extraordinary guy to have on. It's a big guest. So we have that one coming. There's a big week coming up. And then we should have the, so that's Primetime episode 138. we should have episode 139 announced by Thursday as well.
Terrific.
And I'm just saying it's epic. It's epic months. We just, we're bringing the A game is what I'm just saying. So, and like I said, it's hard to top what we just had tonight. That was just, it was fun. It was informative. It was candid. So I couldn't ask for any more on that. All right. Bear, do you have anything coming up on Sunday?
That's still being worked out, but I do have Indiana Ortiz coming up here in a couple weeks. That's going to be an exciting interview. And I've also just confirmed that Sebastian of Cavalier Geneva will be coming in June. So kind of stay tuned for more guest information, but I'm really excited about those two. We might still have an interview for this Sunday. I'm excited to hopefully get those details ironed out. So
yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool. So man, again, the A games, Sebastian, we had him on the Thursday show. You're going to really have fun with him. And like I said, Bear, you bring that human element into the show. I think that's really good. That's what's, I think, also fun. Certainly, you showed the human side of the cigar industry really well on that, as well as giving great information. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's very humbling.
Yep. Final note to our audience. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to our sponsors, our partners out there. We couldn't ask for it without all of you folks who are tuned in at 12:30 on the East Coast. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Scott, who was in, I know Scott may have left from his hospital bed. I mean, I don't know. I just, and Scott's been going through a rough time lately. I can tell you that. So, so thank you guys. It means a lot. But anyway, let's send it. This is going to wrap up Primetime Special Edition 75 into the annals of history for Tuesday, May 12, 2020, now May 13th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody Thursday and next week. Have a great one, everyone.
We'll see you next time.